That's a bit raw dog-ish.
Okay, yes. All right, quite. Because, yeah, how long has it been now? A lot's happened.
I mean, not just like in every realm of human whatever, tons has happened.
Yeah, I'm a bus driver now.
Yeah. I'm not.
I gotta be honest,
I'm not okay.
I completely love it.
I'm glad. Yeah, I thought you would. It seems like it would suit you. It just when you said it as an idea, I was like, that just suits you down to the ground. And but there's always like the reality versus blah blah blah. But yeah, no, I'm glad. I'm glad.
Yeah. Well, the thing I like about it is that the overwhelming majority of the day is spent driving a bus.
Yeah.
That's it, they make that a very specific sort of approach to how it works, because the more stuff you're distracted by, the less safe a bus driver you are. That's kind of the
Yeah,
philosophy of it all.
yeah. That's interesting, actually, because there's the only jobs where you're actually doing the job for most of the time doing the job are like bottom end minimum wage, like factory work.
Yeah.
That's all I can think of, really. Well, clean. Yeah, if you're a cleaner, you're certainly
Hospitality.
doing. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's
Like where you're not spending half your time, like either sitting around waiting, like in because retail. Depending on where you work, obviously, but retail, you can just be. I mean, when I worked nights at a Shell station, it was three customers a shift, maybe, or doing paperwork, or. But yeah, bus driving, I assume, is 90%+ just driving the bus.
Yeah, and a lot of it. There's a little bit of paperwork. We have to do our mind. It's something like 36 hours of classroom stuff every 3 years or something like that.
Is that just refresher stuff
Yeah,
or
yeah. It's yeah. You just spend a day in the classroom, and they, sometimes there's updates to various policies, laws, that kind of thing that we've got to be informed about. But it's all part of keeping our qualifications. We've got to renew them every. I think
which
it's
is
3 years,
good.
yeah. Yeah. It's
Which
actually it's a very well regulated industry. There's a
seems
lot of
good.
regulation.
I mean, that is a very big, heavy thing you're driving. It's
Yeah.
it makes sense.
Yeah, which is why when fucking
Full of
white
people.
van men just pull out in front of you at the last minute, there are certain, I don't know if I'm developing prejudices, but there are definitely certain types of drivers that I've come to not like. White van men
It's
is
what? What's the? Is that the worst? White van man.
one of them. Interestingly enough, the women that tend to drive vans, not so bad at all. Now, I don't want to be too stereotypical, but a lot of the women drive, not all of them, but a lot of them are usually like florists or something
Yeah,
to that effect. Like
right.
it's a, I don't want to say like a womanly
Lean that way.
business, but like it's,
I know you. Yeah, I mean, it's gonna lean that way a bit just because of how
yeah.
things. Yeah.
I can't, I
I mean,
can't speak.
I think it generally comes out in studies and stuff of driving habits. Obviously, this is very much a generalization on average, but women are just less aggressive drivers, and
Yeah. They, on the whole, they are, except blonde women in
all the
Range
women I know.
Rovers.
Oh God, yeah, I can imagine.
They are up there with white van men. So there is a counter, gender counter to the white van man, which is blonde women in Range Rovers.
All the women I know are very aggressive drivers.
I know quite a lot of aggressive driving women as well, but I know a lot of, but I think on the whole, on the road, women tend to be a little bit more like forward thinking, a bit more strategic, a bit more like, but that's not, but also to be fair, there's good and bad from every group, really. Like,
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
it's, yeah,
But yeah, I
but,
remember like not like a few years, I don't know, it's probably quite some years ago, but I remember I remember white van men being the thing that people talked about, but then I remember it was like BMW drivers. They were the ones that everybody hated.
yeah, they're not as bad as they used to be, because they all drive
They've
Teslas
all
now.
gone, they will, I was going to say, like, they've all gone to SUVs and shit.
Yeah. I think the big problem with driving nowadays is just the sheer size of the cars on the road. They're just too big, and everyone wants to drop their kids off right outside the school gates in their absolute massive truck. And
I
it's
know this
like,
is like one of the most old people things you can say, but like we used to walk to school, or the school bus. It was either walk to school, or if it's too far away, the school bus. Why is everybody dropping off their kids now?
Or at least drop them off like a little further away. Let them walk some of the way in, so you're not just clogging up that one road. That's the bit that kind of gets me. Also, actually, on a note of things I've come to learn on the bus routes, kids today actually really lovely on the whole.
I mean, that's my, I limited contact with young people, obviously, but young people I meet online and stuff, yeah, they've got their head screwed on like way more than we did.
Yeah, I think so. They're certainly great passengers. They're certainly like perfectly polite. On some trips they get a bit noisy, but that's fucking kids for you, right? Like that's just,
They're having fun, yeah.
yeah, they're just, they're excited to get home from school and stuff. That's totally, I mean, I honestly, like, I'm more worried about the boomers than I am about the kids. Like,
Oh,
I'm not
yeah,
worried about
no,
the
for sure.
kids. I think it's very easy to go into the realm of like kids. Yeah, like you were saying just now, like kids in my day, rah 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 rah, but.
No, it's the absolute opposite. Yeah, no, I think millennials, that was a shit generation, but
No,
like the zoomers and
no,
the
I will say, I know, I will defend millennials. Boomers are a problem, because they have hoarded all the wealth. A lot of their wealth that they have is inherited. They didn't even earn anyway. They lived through the greatest like period of prosperity that this country's ever known. Like
Well,
and
they had there was a series. It was a set of circumstances coming out of the war, economy naturally booming, full employment almost because a lot of men died,
House
particularly in
building.
Europe. Yeah, house built projects. Yeah, government projects, social welfare, house building. But more than anything else, insanely low property prices compared to now. So
And quite low
they were
food
able to
prices.
build up assets. Foods, yeah, foods remained relatively stable. It's kind of weird. The essentials for living, like basic food and housing and medicine and stuff like that, that's gone up. Luxuries have gone down, which tells you a lot.
It's kind of interesting because I get a lot of breaks in Gloucester. So, like, obviously, as a bus driver, we're mandated breaks. These are mandated by European law and UK law, and there's obviously union stuff and industry stuff as well. So I will get, like an hour here, an hour there in Gloucester, just to do with what I want. And I do eat out a fair bit. Like I've got, the means for it, and I've got the time for it. There's nothing. What am I going to do? Sit in the break room and scroll on my phone for an hour? So I go out and see the town a little bit. But honestly, to eat out in just a standard sort of like restaurant really is not that much more expensive than cooking at
No, that yeah,
home.
that's the thing. Yeah, because the classic boomer response is, you say you can't afford a house or whatever, but you're eating out, t 2 or 3 days a week, and you're going to coffee shops, and you got a £1,000 iPhone or whatever, and like, yeah, all those things are relatively much, much cheaper than they used to be, and houses are astronomically expensive.
And also not to mention to a lot of people nowadays, their £1,000 iPhone is a computer. Like it's their computer.
Absolutely,
If you're sitting with a laptop, they're not saying, "Oh, you got a £1,000 computer to do your business." No, it's just like
it's seen as frivolous, a phone, when for most, like you say, for probably the majority of people now, certainly globally the majority, it is their computer.
And I could use it. Like I could get rid of my. I mean, obviously, I enjoy using my computer in all its ways, but for the most part, my phone is actually a bit like it's a bit cheap. I paid about like 140 quid for it or something. But if I had a decent phone, I could hang out in the Discord room. I could,
I
help
mean,
help.
I could. I'm not sure I will. I'm not sure. I fucking hate phones.
As a tool, they're fine. I
For
find,
myself to use, I mean.
sorry, the.
For myself to use. Like, I don't hate them as a concept. I don't hate them conceptually. Just, I hate using them.
I mean, I really don't like how locked down they are, and Google want to make them even more locked down.
It's a very small screen, and I hate touch. I hate touch interface. But to finish the thing about boomers, so they benefited from all these conditions. Relatively high, well, very high corporation tax. That money was, put back into social stuff. Companies were in, it was an industrial policy and stuff. It encouraged companies to invest in productivity rather than, share buybacks and all that bullshit. So they benefited from all these conditions, which is fine. Don't begrudge them that. That's good. That's a good thing. But then they shut the door for the next generations to benefit from similar. That's the fucking problem
That
with boomers.
is, yeah. I mean, I think like I don't have too much of a strong opinion. I think Gen X is a mixed bag because the older Gen X tend to lean, you know, tend to take on a lot of qualities of boomers, and the younger Gen X tend to take on a lot of qualities of millennials. But
Gen X was a very small cohort, like it was a low birth rate then, so it's like it almost doesn't really count. I like the spirit of Gen X, the sort of like not giving a fuck kind of attitude, like very laid back kind of thing. I enjoy that part of it, but that also goes hand in hand with like the apathy and the political apathy and stuff.
Yeah, a lot of corporate apathy as well. Like you look at like the MTV generation, you know, it's like, well, like MTV, it's still, especially from the way I see it, it's still quite a corporate world, albeit under the guise of it being a bit rebellious.
Yeah, I mean, in a world of TV, it was, you know, it felt like, it was never really a big thing in the UK. I think I had one friend who had access to it at some point. But yeah, in the world of TV, it felt indie and rebellious. But of course, yeah, it's anything coming over the TV is. I sometimes envy, uncommonly, America with its, what's it called, like public access cable channels?
Oh, right, PBS, yeah.
Not PBS, public access, which is where it was like TV stations where you could, it was like podcasts and stuff before podcasts, but on TV, where you could just go into a TV studio and do a show and it would just be broadcast. Like, no, like very, very small viewership for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That does sound kind of amazing. It sounds a little bit like shortwave radio where you can get all kinds of crazy shit on that.
Yeah. But I think, I don't know, I don't think you even had to, I might be wrong about this, but I don't think you even had to pay money. I think it was almost like a public service, like there would be a studio and, you know, the cameras and everything were there and you just did your thing, I think that's how, maybe you paid like a little fee or something, I don't know.
That's quite amazing. I think shortwave radio, you have to like make a deal with a station or something, but it's usually like £60 an hour or something.
Yeah, right.
Which is what's that, about the same rate as Babe Station, so...
Babe Station.
Do you remember that?
I don't know. The name sounds
Baby. It's that TV channel where the women shake their boobs.
Yeah, I think that was after I stopped watching TV, so I was vaguely aware of it. But
man, that was a weird phenomenon. I don't even know if that's still a thing anymore. I don't even know if we've got tape TV anymore. Like it's.
I mean, that sprung up after deregulation of the of TV, didn't it? Like,
yeah.
Like 90s. Under Blair, I guess, maybe a little bit earlier than that. When it was all deregulated, and then you just got this explosion of like channels, reality shows, and then the weird. I think for the longest time, I didn't even know you'd be flicking through the channels, and you come across something, and it'd just be like text messages scrolling up the screen, and like a picture of something, and it didn't always feel explicitly sexual. Like, it was just odd. Like I didn't really know what is this?
Yeah.
What am I seeing?
Yeah. Also, there was, and this was a very narrow part of that era of TV, was the video game channel.
Video game channel?
Yeah, there was like it's like gamer TV or something.
Really?
And you could text in, and your message would go up on the screen about games and stuff, and it would have a game on, and then they would have game review shows and stuff. But then it would just it would repeat so much.
Yeah. Right.
So they'd only have like three shows or something a week, but it would just be one after the other. And then a little bit of just like, here's a picture and some text messages and or like some sort of TV-based game where if you texted in this happened or something.
Gamer TV sounds horrible.
Then how much video game stuff on TV was there? Is really not very much.
No.
So it's. I remember watching the same Hitman 2 review like again and again, like six times. Because it was around that time, I think. I don't know if, am I going to be the only one that sort of remembers this weird TV channel?
Quite possibly, yeah. Yeah.
Am I the only one that ever watched it?
The viewership of a channel like that at any given time was probably single digits.
That is interesting because, you're right. But at the same time, how much would it have cost to put that TV channel together? Quite a lot, I would imagine, right?
I mean, I assume it's still it's kind of like how it is on the web now. I assume if you got because the numbers are always a bit opaque. I mean, they're not with it was kind of what with TV, but basically, you've got a channel, you can sell advertising slots to something.
I guess. Maybe.
I assume it had adverts.
I can't remember. There might have been, probably.
Or maybe it's just paid reviews of games.
But there weren't that many reviews of games. I'd have loved it if they had loads of...
Just Hitman 2 over and over again.
Yeah, yeah. Just...
But, well, up next, Hitman 2 review, followed at 9:30 by Hitman 2 review.
Yeah. Oh, man. Do you know, actually, interestingly enough, one game I've been getting into is Mini Metro, which is quite an old one.
I hate that game so much.
I don't know why I like it.
I respect it's a well-made game, but it's uniquely stressful.
Oh, I guess so. Yeah.
Like whatever the stress centers of whatever my brain responds to stress-wise, Mini Metro plugs into every single one of those fucking receptors.
Oh, sorry, not Mini Metro, Mini Motorways, which is the same as Motorways.
Yeah. No, that game, that I just feel immediately stressed, and then worse and worse the longer it goes on. It is not a pleasant experience for me at all.
I quite like it. It fits into one of those games that I can sit down and play for 20 minutes and then just crack on with something else.
I think I like games that are about sort of managing chaos,
yeah,
or managing, you know, near chaos. I enjoy them if there's a possibility of getting like an equilibrium.
Okay, yeah.
But in Mini Metro, it's managing chaos and it's always in decline. It's always getting worse.
Yes.
And you're heading towards, inevitably you're heading towards failure. And I can't cope with that.
Okay. When I used to make games at school, all of my games ended up focused on that. Because like, I didn't really have a, and I still don't, have a full concept of how to put a game together. Like the technical stuff I can do. But there's a whole world of like gameplay mechanics and concepts that are just quite difficult for me to get my head around. I just don't.
Yeah.
Like, I love games. They're one of my favorite forms of medium. But like, I struggle making them because of the, like the same thing with board games and stuff like that. Like to make it interesting, but with a loop that kind of works. So all the stuff I used to make was basically roguelike shooters or something, so you'd have a very basic loop and then you just do it and the game would get progressively harder until you died or whatever,
and then
you'd get a high score. That's basically
that's where every game, every new game I see, right, you know, that looks interesting, oh it's a fucking roguelike, like everything's roguelike now, everything's that, just like the tight loop repeated until you fail. There's a place for that, and I enjoy that now and again, but I don't like everything being
That's the type of game that if you're bad at making games, that you make. Like, it's just...
It's not even bad at making games, just like limited time, limited resources. It's something that can... It exceeds its contents in terms of longevity, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. But what would you... Okay, so counter to that, what's the opposite of that? What's the best made game with intricate loops and lots to do and maybe a story or something?
I'll tell you about the two games I've been playing recently.
Oh, yeah?
I've been playing a game called Amazing Cultivation Simulator.
Oh, okay.
Which is cultivation in the Chinese sense, so it's like Taoist qi cultivation, which ties into like Chinese mythology and feng shui and alchemy and all that sort of Taoist, culturally Taoist stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about focusing your chi to become immortal, and it looks, and at the beginning sort of plays a bit Rimworldy, like you have these cult members essentially, and you're building buildings, doing tasks, but in order to like heat or cool a room, for example, you're using feng shui rather than physics.
Okay, yeah, all right.
And then it's ridiculous. So your idea is essentially to become immortal, and it plays in the very surface level sense. It plays like RimWorld, but with this mythology stuff. And when you do your first cultivation, which is the thing in that thing, so then you become an inner disciple. You no longer work, and you just focus on qi cultivation.
Okay.
And one of the things you have to do is you have an artifact which you use as a weapon, and an artifact is anything that you've turned into an artifact. So for example, I had other cults like attack you and stuff. I had other cults coming at me firing, and whatever your artifact is, it just like flies around the map, like attacking people.
Okay. Yeah.
And two cultivators came at me. One of them, their enchanted weapon was a shit.
Okay.
And the other one, was a hat or something. It's just random objects that they've enchanted. And there's a thing in the game where you so the, okay. There's hundreds of these like laws that you can pursue. It's as fucking stupid as it sounds. Yeah. There's hundreds of these laws that you can pursue, and one of them teaches a man the essence of femininity.
Okay.
Which if you're a man, it turns you into a woman.
All right. Okay.
And because you're a woman, your penis falls off.
Right.
But your penis is also an ingredient in Chinese alchemy, so you can sell it.
Okay.
And you can also take a regrowth pill that regrows your limbs, and that will regrow your penis, which will immediately fall off because you're a woman and you shouldn't have a penis.
But I
essentially, you can farm penises for profit.
I have anatomical questions here.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of reproductive organs and the reproductive system, women have like many more components than a man. So. Yes. I always think this is a little bit of like nature being incredibly unfair to women, because if you think about all the shit that women go through with their reproductive organs and everything that can go wrong, you know, from periods to childbirth, the whole shit. And what have we got? We've got a tube and a sack.
I mean, it is like the sack is inconvenient though. Like it has to be dangling on the outside because the temperature inside our bodies would be too warm for the sperm and would kill them. So we've got this little thing dangling outside our bodies with a fucking, essentially a radiator system, a heatsink, wrinkly fucking
That's
skin.
Nothing compared to...
No, not saying it is, but yeah. We could certainly be tidied up.
Okay. We've got some notes for God, if we like. We've got some...
period every day for your... large portion of your life, and then menopause, and horrible.
Not
every day,
every month.
Every month, sorry.
So under this men learning femininity thing, do they grow all of these organs? Also, one thing, and I'm going to sound like a complete fucking idiot when I say this, right, but since women have substantially more, should we say, apparatus for reproduction inside their body, does that squish everything in a bit more, or do they just have less less intestines or something to make room for it? How does it fit?
It's partly like the wider hips, right, is to fit all that in. But I mean, the womb, the unoccupied womb is pretty small, right? So it doesn't take up much. I think it just goes behind things or whatever. I mean, it's clearly it's squishing up a bit. But yeah, an occupied womb with a fucking baby in it, I'm creeped out by pregnancy. That is not... It's not natural to have another fucking person living inside your body.
I mean, it is kind of the very definition of natural, if you think about it, really.
No, I disagree.
I mean, don't get me wrong. No. I'm sure we'd all agree that if women could just, like, lay an egg and then crack on with life...
Yeah.
You know,
put it in the airing cupboard.
For
9 months.
Or just pop it in your bed or something and just, like, you know...
As long as it's kept warm. But no, having another person inside you, that is disgusting. Stop that.
Okay. Take notes there, God. What's the other game that you were playing?
Black and White.
Oh, okay.
It started a couple of days ago. I was in the mood for it, so I've just been tinkering around in White. Yeah. Mm. And I love it, as I've loved it since it came out. It's a beautiful, amazing game. There's nothing like it.
Mm. Okay, you know, I never played it.
Have you really not?
No, is it one I should get, or should. Is it of its time?
Yeah, no. I mean, it is, in some ways it is, but it's very much a Deus Ex or a Morrowind, where it's a dead end. Like nothing ever. I mean, more so because at least Deus Ex and Morrowind are still games of that type. But yeah, Black and White, there's nothing really, and certainly nothing that went as far.
Okay, I know. I remember it having a really big launch.
Yeah, no, huge launch. Sort of. It was one of the. I mean, it's Molyneux, so he talked it up.
Oh, right.
And it was a bit. You know, it's a bit like, it's not quite what you promised, but it is still.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It's an amazing. It's a weird sandboxy playgroundy thing that I adore.
Mm. Okay, interesting. Also, I still need to get around to watching that playthrough of Morrowind that you sent me on Discord.
Oh, that's really good. Yeah, for anybody listening, what's it called? Unguided Morrowind.
It's
somebody playing Morrowind for the first time and not metagaming anything, so not looking anything up in the wiki, not looking at guides, just playing it and only using the information they can glean from playing the game to play the game.
That does sound pretty. I always try and do a degree of roleplay whenever I play Morrowind, but I can't help knowing where the good gear is.
No, I'm terrible at role playing in games. Like I always just end up being me. Like I even to the like I've tried so many times to play Morrowind and go, I'm not going to do what I usually do. I'm going to like use magic. I'm going to pick a couple of magic schools, concentrate on that, and just it never happens. Like I just end up. I mean, it makes sense doing what I prefer to do, but I wish I could. And yeah, let alone like role playing, role playing.
I mean, there are certain like roles that like I like to play. Like usually they're like I usually base on my like sort of like do you know like moods that you have or like
Yeah.
phases that you kind of go through. Like I tend to sort of like follow that kind of vibe, if you know what I mean. Like so I
Yeah.
like playing as monks where it's like it's quite
Yeah.
minimalist. You don't have many items with you. You sort of
That's actually what in the Unguided thing, that's actually exactly what he's done. Yeah, it's one of the reasons why I sort of thought of you when I was watching it. He's literally he said, I want to be a sort of like a monk and like blah blah blah, yeah.
Oh, awesome. I do quite like recently monks in sort of the role playing world, you know, in like D&D or
Well, I
in
mean, when we were doing the D&D, you were a monk, weren't you?
And I had a great fun playing as a monk as well. So like, I like the monkey character because the monk e character,
Yes, yeah.
because it, I don't know, like I don't know what it is. I just sort of like there's something freeing about not having to worry too much about gear as well. That's always something I quite like. So
Yeah, I
like,
always end up because I still just I always end up with the Daedric Crescent. And so long blade, sneak and security because it's Morrowind, you're gonna do sneak and security. But I always go on armored. Like for me, the end game Morrowind is getting the Grand Soul gems and then enchanting your gear to do all kinds of crazy shit.
That
And
is
if I was
ultimate.
sort of if I was min-maxing that, I would go like Daedric armor. It's got the maximum enchant points, the whole suit, so you're enchanting every little bit of it. I don't do that. Yeah, I stay on armored just because I think it's kind of cool.
But then you just become some sort of super mage that you are sort of practicing magic at that point.
How do you mean?
Well, if you're, I don't know, I mean, depends how you look at it, but if you were to go through this world, do your missions and all that kind of stuff, and you would end up, your ultimate character would be someone who does not have innate magical abilities, but has acquired excellent enchanted items that fundamentally raises you to the level of a wizard.
Yes, yes.
You're basically indistinct from a wizard. I think D&D makes this distinction that the difference between is it like a mage and a sorcerer is that one of them is innately magical whilst the other has become magic, you know, has learned magic or learned
I mean,
spells.
something like that, isn't it? Yeah, I think wizards have to, yeah, it's based on intelligence and they have to
Wizards also,
study, and sorcerers pull it from there. It's like a force of will kind of thing, right?
Which I'd yeah. So you sort of become a wizard. Which one's which again?
Well, no, I'm not wielding any magic. I am just wearing magic. To me, it's more like Achilles, like blessed by the gods, but fights like a person,
But you're blessed by the person at the Mage's Guild who you spent paid a lot of money. You're more like Batman, really.
Oh God, it is Batman, isn't it? Yeah, shit. No superpowers,
Very
but
expensive
money.
equipment, yeah, money.
Yeah. Oh
I
God,
always
yeah.
reckon that Batman is a fash.
Oh yeah, Batman's flash. Yeah, I know people argue against it, but no, he's clearly
No,
flash.
yeah. Although I the Adam West Batman, which I really do quite enjoy, I always kind of feel that Robin is the fash one, and Batman is more. He's more like the idealized, like American exceptionalist. Kind of like probably more like liberal capitalist, you know.
I've only just had this thought, but I think it's a good one. I think, yeah, that 60s Batman show was kind of like Don Quixote, where you've got the idiot idealistic knight who's out of touch, doesn't really understand that the world has changed, blah, 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 and his like far more intelligent, far more capable, far more sort of like realistic sidekick.
I don't know because Robin is not smarter. He is.
This, to be fair, is based on like my recollection of watching this as an 8-year-old.
Because usually, like, what Robin will say something like, "Why can't we just round up all the guys and just put them in jail immediately?"
Oh, right,
and then, like, Batman's a bit like, "No, we have to obey the." See, this is why Batman comes across very like liberally, because he has so much faith in this rule of law.
Yeah,
and then Robin's a bit more like, "Let's just kill him."
I mean, I will say that 60s Batman, the Adam West Batman, is divergent from any other representation of Batman ever made. Very unique.
But it's very interesting insofar that it's fundamentally Cold War propaganda.
Yeah.
And if you look at it through the lens of the Cold War, it becomes very interesting because basically Batman's trying to sell American exceptionalism. You know, it's almost like he's trying to present the idea that the idea is less about the villains. It's more about the idea that the wealthy American elites are the ones to save us through their, through law and order.
I think comic books have often been an expression of comic books historically in America in like the 50s and that they were a way to express things that you wouldn't really be able to express explicitly, like the plot, you know. The plight of black people, the plight of gay people suffering homophobia, you know, with the X-Men and stuff like that. So I think they've got that side to them, but they've also got this very Nietzschean ubermensch.
Yeah.
The strong man who has, you know, if you've got the ability, then you've got the right to impose your will kind of thing. So they're this combination of, which I guess is very American. It's very, very counterculture, very 1960s, hippies, this combination of fascism and sort of social progressiveness.
Definitely. I mean, I'm just trying to think now of what would be like a genuine left-leaning comic book character.
I'm not super versed in comics, but I'm aware that isn't there like a Red Superman or something, where a version of Superman where it was the USSR, he landed in the USSR, and Soviet Superman or something. I swear there's something like that, but obviously from the perspective of they're the baddies.
I think, I could be wrong on this one, I think the Flash might be a bit more in that realm, where he's a bit more like restorative justice and that kind of thing.
My understanding, my contact with Flash is the TV show. I very much enjoyed the Flash TV show, so I know a lot about the TV show Flash, but I don't know how closely that relates to the comic book ones. And I do. He does seem a bit more, sort of genuinely liberal.
Like a bit more like because if you think about like the Batman world, like a lot of the problems in the Batman universe are created by Bruce Wayne and his peers. He does charity events, but he doesn't. The only systemic change that he pushes for is the increased violence against what he perceives to be criminals.
I think somebody did a thing, didn't they? Or it's an oft-repeated thing that, like, if the money he spent on being Batman, if he spent that on social programs, that would be more effective way to fight crime than beating up poor people.
Yeah, because he does.
I don't enjoy Batman because I find it very silly. I find the character silly, like a bit fash and also silly.
Yeah.
And I think if you're going to do Batman, have you ever watched the Snyder DC films?
No.
They're a fucking nightmare. They're horrid. They're horrid. It's like very self-serious. And also very fashy. But I think if you're going to do Batman in particular, you've got to do silly. You've got to embrace the camp and embrace the silliness. Maybe not to the extent of the 60s show, but I think in that direction. At least maybe this is just my personal taste. But if it were to be a Batman that I can enjoy, I think it's got to embrace. It's got to be silly. It's got to be Saturday morning cartoon Batman,
Saturday morning cartoon Batman. I remember being relatively serious too.
And when I said that, I forgot there was actually a Saturday morning cartoon.
But I know what you mean. Yeah. Honestly, I will die on the hill that Adam West was the best Batman and the most enjoyable to watch.
I don't think I've really enjoyed any version of Batman that I've seen, I didn't really like. I didn't like the 60s one.
I mean,
it was too silly even for me as a kid.
I would say go back to it, but Just for an episode or two. They're only short episodes.
Yeah.
And because they're Monster of the Week episodes for the most part, they do them in twos. So it's like usually a full like story arc will just take place over two episodes. But they're only like, what, half an hour, 20 minutes or whatever each.
Yeah.
You can BitTorrent them or whatever. Like it, and I don't know, like I'd be interested to see what you think about just like one or pick a random episode from like in the middle.
Yeah. I'll do that actually. The thing is, I always, even in my childhood, I had a distaste for things from the 60s. Just the aesthetics and the mood and the feeling of things from the 60s always felt a bit. I don't know what it is, but yeah, always had a. Maybe it is growing up in the 80s that instills that. But
no, I kind of get you. I'm not a fan of the 60s aesthetic either. Never really, you know, because neither of
it
us particularly
felt like cloying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess a lot of modern pop culture was still trying to find itself around then, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It was kind of coming into being, yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, before we move on to it, based on what you're saying, I think you might like the Flash TV show, actually. It has a bit of that. Yeah, it's, like you say, it's a bit restorative. It's got that campness to it. It doesn't take itself too seriously. Mm. It's grounded without being, you know, overly self-serious.
Okay.
I think you could actually enjoy it. It's very, especially the first season, is very Monster of the Week.
Okay, yeah. I kind of like that. And I noticed that a few shows that do that tend to fade away from it after a series or two.
Yeah, yeah. The Flash does do that to me, which I prefer, honestly, the Monster of the Week. Because it was always... the villains in the first season of The Flash are always sort of like ironic.
Yeah,
like that. This is often a thing in comic books, but I remember one that like he died by like lethal gas for being executed.
All right,
yeah. And because of that, his power is he can turn into gas. It's always stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
like how Bruce Banner became the Hulk because of exposure to radiation. I'll never understand.
There should be so many Hulks. All those people who worked on Chernobyl.
Yeah. I mean, we still don't know how it happened in the Fallout universe entirely. I feel like it's somewhat inconsistent. If they want ghouls to be a feature in a subplot, they'll find a way to make them.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel
also it comes from an era that Fallout is very much harping back to, of like before we really knew what radiation would do to a human body, or at least in the popular consciousness we didn't really. And it's just a fun idea to say, you know, because it will cause mutations.
Yeah.
So it's fun to just follow that to a fun place rather than where that actually goes. Yeah. Which is just death.
Yep. Yeah. I gotta be honest, I did enjoy the second season of Fallout.
I fucking detest it. The first season, at least, I've not seen the second.
I think the second is probably better. I think
it would have to be. Speaking of Monster of the Week, though, I've been meaning to watch it for 33 years, and I got around to it the other day. I've started watching The X-Files.
Oh, okay. I've seen a couple of episodes of that. How are you finding it?
I don't know. I mean, this is my fault for waiting around for 33 years to watch it, but it's so 90s.
Yeah.
Like, it's surprisingly 90s.
Yeah.
And then it's weird. So far, I'm going to stick with it, but so far, it's kind of Monster of the Week, but, like, in The Flash, they'd be a monster. Some things would happen, some weird things. They'd sort of investigate the weird things. They'd work out what is going on. They'd confront the monster. Often, you know, it would beat them once, and then they'd work it out, and then they'd come back with a plan and defeat the monster, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how it goes in The Flash and, you know, many TV shows. In X-Files, mm-hmm. so far, it's like, there's a monster.
Mm-hmm.
Monster does the things that the monster does.
Mm-hmm.
They go and investigate it. Usually, which one's which? Mulder will see something supernatural just as Scully walks out the room conveniently for 5 minutes. Like, that's happened so many times already.
Yeah.
So they'll confront the monster. The monster will kind of win. And then it just sort of ends. Usually, like, it doesn't... Or they'll sort of catch the monster, but not in a very narratively interesting way. It just sort of peters out. Each episode just sort of is a weird thing, and then just peters out.
Yeah. I found that to be one of the more interesting things about the X-Files. Because it it doesn't shy away from the fact that weird shit exists.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it has to marry it with a world that people don't think it exists.
Yeah, yeah. But so, also, it will bring up some very weird things, but then often just not explain them at all.
Yeah, that's kind of its thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's that feeling of, oh God, yeah, I should probably mention this, a week ago or so, I got clickbaited into some video that was really interesting, actually. So it's obviously a conspiracy theory channel.
Yeah.
And it was this person being interviewed, and it was like a 3-hour long video, and the video is 90%+ just this dude being interviewed, talking about what happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
And this dude is like, he's in his 50s, or for, you know, my age basically, from like Pittsburgh, somewhere like that. I think it's Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Working class dude who had the feeling of just being like a very ordinary, down to earth, probably does like a manual labor job, you know, hangs out with his friends in the bar, has a what, you know, just the dude, just a normal middle American dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like kind of with that no nonsense, you know, not given to flights of fancy, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he told this story about when he and his friends were 14, and they lived in a very rough area with this abandoned steel mill.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to go and hang out there, but there was also a lot of mafia activity and various other things, and wild acts of wild dogs as well.
Okay.
So they used to go with guns, used to take guns with them. And they used to just go into the steel mill, like build a thing, have a bonfire, you know, just kids hanging out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he describes this scenario where I'll speed through it. They see here this weird thing outside. They go outside. Something is tossing dogs. Like, a pack of dogs has attacked whatever this is, and something is tossing dogs through the air. They're just flying.
Okay, yeah.
And then this thing climbs a pile of coal, and it turns out to put my words, like a werewolf, a werewolf out of Morrowind, or you know, like a big dog-like, scraggly figure, but 15 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
Like an enormous dog man thing, wolf man thing. And it's got glowing red eyes, and it chases them, it follows them up into this abandoned factory thing. They're scared for their lives, this thing's coming at them, and then a train goes past and whistles, scares it off, and blah, blah, blah. They go home, blah, blah, blah. And there's a little bit of an epilogue where they tell their parents don't believe them. And then one of their parents, who was a cop, like comes to them later and says, look, I know what this is that you're talking about. Some of my officers have seen it. You know, it's been, we've had events with this thing over the years, multiple times, but don't talk about it. If you talk about it, everybody will think you're crazy. Just say, you know, pretend it didn't happen kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So this is his story. He tells it very, you know, it's a long ass story. It's a 3-hour video. And he tells this, he goes through this story, you know, the entire course of the night kind of thing. And I 100% believe that he 100% believes what he's saying.
Okay,
which is the thing, he doesn't remotely come across as a grifter. He doesn't even come across as somebody who actually wants the attention. He comes in every other aspect. He's, you know, very down to earth. And I this isn't me saying that I believe he saw what he's saying, what he thinks he saw, but I don't believe he's mentally ill, and I believe he 100% believes every word he's saying. And it was that made it interesting to watch, if you know what I mean. Like, I was gripped. Partly because he was actually a very good storyteller. He told the story very down to earth but interesting way. And sorry, I've taken up a lot of time with that, but I just found the whole experience of watching that very engaging. And it also, part of my brain is like, go on, engage with this conspiracy stuff. Like, allow yourself to believe it because it will be fun.
Yeah, I don't know. I probably have told you this story before when I was about 7. And periodically, this ghost would appear in the corner of my room. And it looked like, a Casper the Friendly Ghost type of ghost, you know, and it would just float in the corner.
Really?
Yeah, like real as day, right? And it wouldn't just be there for a moment or two. It'd be there for ages. It wouldn't respond to me. It wouldn't do anything, but it just looked. I couldn't even tell you how much of a ghost this looked like. I still remember it to this day. And I told my parents, and they were like, no, don't be silly, Chris, don't be silly, it's not a ghost, not a ghost. And then I initially, the first few times I saw it, I was scared because you see a ghost. But then after a while, when it, you know, sort of, you sort of learn that it's it's not a danger. I made more of an effort to try and work out what this thing was. And it turns out that it was the moon shining through the net curtains in a very specific way that presented this. And maybe there might have been some dust involved or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
so it was almost like a hologram at that point. Like it's making a 3D.
It was almost like an accidental hologram. And ever since then, I have kind of internalized how bizarre something can look while still being incredibly mundane. So any of these like UFO sighting things or anything like that, I sort of take a similar line to you where it's like, I don't assume that the person is lying, but at the same time, like there could be other explanations, an infinite number of other explanations.
On top of exactly what you're describing, but like, on top of that, like we edit our memories.
Yeah.
Like we know, different studies, we edit our memories. We also like, and you can sort of give into sort of flights of fancy. It can become... You will be convinced that you're seeing more than you're really seeing. You'll like lean into an interpretation. Yep. Yeah, I think it's very easy for your imagination, to just run away with you in that way.
Absolutely. And when you think, if you've got any kind of so here's just one thing that it could be. He says him and his mates like building bonfires. Who's to say that they didn't throw something on that bonfire that made them go a bit, loopy?
Yeah, I mentioned this in the Discord a bit ago, and Temus, the first thing he said was gas leak.
Gas leak. Yeah.
Interesting thing. So there's five of these kids. They all had the same story. All but two of them are dead now. But they all had the same story and had. But I do think that's because I remember a time when. So for university, for 1 year of university, I lived in Southport, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Southport is basically. It's got this art college and it's a retirement town for old people, basically. Mm-hmm. So it has enormous graveyards.
Mm-hmm.
And to get back from college to our house, the quickest way was to cut through this immense graveyard. So virtually the whole walk several miles from the middle of town to our house was almost entirely through this graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd also been doing graffiti, alien-based graffiti around the town as like a sort of art project slash... Mm-hmm. funny thing. And we were very, very stoned walking home one night, and it was like dusky, getting dark, like autumn.
Mm-hmm.
And I was feeling creeped out because graveyard at night. Mm-hmm. It's me and my friend, and I kept looking over my shoulder, and one time when I looked over my shoulder, I saw an alien like peeping out from behind a gravestone. And I turned to my friend and I was like, the aliens are chasing us. And he was like, where? And I was like, back there. And like, he clearly, when he looked back, saw them too. And then we just legged it and ran home. So it's my point with that is obviously I was just imagining slash hallucinating, like, because it was drugs. But when I told him what to see, he saw it too.
Yeah.
I seeded his mind basically as to what he was going to see. And then we ran home terrified, got home, and then felt very silly. But. Yeah,
Inception. I mean, it could be something. It could be. Like he said, there's a mafia guy. There's mafia activity there. So it could be that the mafia have been developing power armor of sorts, or could just be in a suit of armor. Like
One thing. I mean, there were 14-year-olds going down into an industrial place to have a bonfire. They got guns. And one thing they didn't mention was booze or drugs.
Okay, yeah.
Because my first question would be, like, were you drinking or taking drugs? Because, probably. But I also, I do want to sort of, because we're being very skeptical right now. Mm-hmm. There's definitely unexplained things in the world.
Yeah, well, for sure.
Possibly even weird creatures that a few people have seen and, said as a thing and blah, possibly, mm-hmm. right?
Not
impossible.
Possibly. Okay.
I don't think there's a giant 15-foot wolfman in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. but... Yeah, there are certainly weird things.
What if it was like a really tall, hairy guy that didn't get out much?
Like me, but tall.
Yeah. And like really like ripped or whatever. Like they just had some like gigantism. Yeah. Like what's the wrestler guy? He was in The Princess Bride.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Andre's a giant.
That's the one. Yeah. Like he had, but
Yeah.
hairy.
Well, I mean, the default, the thing his parents suggested was like a diseased mangy bear,
Oh,
which would look, and like
yeah.
a bear's big, and then your imagination, especially as a kid, you got to magnify it. It's going, reflecting the light in its eyes. It would look weird if it was diseased and sickly or something. Something along those lines is probably the most likely explanation. But yeah, I mean, I think there probably is a mundane explanation for
Well,
this. Yeah, again.
if it was like a rabid bear, that would make a lot of sense because it would also explain the police being like, we know that there's this bear on the loose. They might not know it's a bear, and their cops might not be that bright.
Well,
Like we know what American cops are like.
if the part about the conversation with the cop is accurate and not been edited by memory and like because this is all for them 30 plus years ago, if his reporting of what the cop said to him was accurate, my suspicion would be that the cops had seen the same thing that they'd seen. It's not a monster, but it's something because superstitions and these again these stories like it's not like adults are not prone to this kind of thing.
Maybe the like you say, that he edited this in his mind a little bit, and it was actually maybe the cops were just offering a bit of advice saying, look, don't go around saying that you've seen a fucking werewolf because you will be outcast as the town crazy. Maybe that was just what they were saying. Maybe it's not like a lot of times, because I, haven't been a journalist, have a decent amount of insights into things like local governments and stuff. And I regularly come into people that go, oh, they're doing this because of this, or this because of this. And it's like, n it's usually because no one's, there's rarely ever any kind of like insidious plan behind the scenes or anything like that.
We like our brains are key to enjoying narrative, and a conspiracy is an enjoyable narrative.
And just because a cop tells you not to say anything doesn't necessarily mean there's something to hide. It might just necessarily.
That's sort of what I was implying with the edited memories. The cop says, "Don't tell everybody about this story. Everybody's going to think you're crazy," and them taking that as a wink, wink, wink.
Or they'll start getting loads of calls in from like the town drunks that'll be like,
every
I've just
kid,
seen the bear.
you've seen the Wolfman. I have a question though. Say you were alone in a house, so nobody to like confirm or whatever, and you saw something that like just on the face of it, absolutely could not possibly be explained in a mundane way. Like a monster. A monster is right there. It's a giant monster sitting in your room, glowing eyes, smoke, whatever. Whatever kind of monster you're imagining, and it's talking. It's growling and talking to you or something. That can't be like a trick of the light or whatever. You know what I mean? What in that moment? What's your assumption?
That there's something wrong with me.
Yeah, so like I'm having a psychotic episode. I need to see somebody kind of thing,
Yeah,
rather
that kind
than
of thing, yeah.
I think the same for me. It's hard to tell until that moment comes, I think,
I
but
mean, that's assuming that it can't possibly be a trick of the light, and like I was having a conversation with Martin Luther King or something.
Because barring actually taking drugs when you expect it, like the only time I've had hallucinations is from sleep deprivation. And when that happens, it's not anything as concrete as that. It starts off as auditory hallucinations, and then I start seeing things. But those because I know what it is, it just makes me laugh. Like I see a thing that I know isn't there, and I'm just like, that's cool.
I get a little like, I don't know, it's like a distraction thing if I haven't had sleep, where I think I see something out the corner of my eye and then I look and I see that it's nothing.
That definitely happens.
I
It's
have not had much in the way of hallucinations at all, to be honest.
for the sleep deprivation, you have to stay up for, I would say the auditory hallucinations start after like 2 days awake, and then you start seeing things at like 5 days awake, three
Okay,
to
I've
five
never been awake that long, so
days.
that'll be it.
Last time I did that, I got to the point where because obviously your cognition is not working properly. I firmly believed that I was the first human being that didn't need to sleep anymore.
I mean, that's
I
a
was
bit.
like, I've cracked it. I've solved it. I'm all good. This is like this is the eighth day awake, and I feel fine. I don't need to sleep anymore. I'm like, I
Is
found a
that
secret.
like when you haven't eaten in so long you don't even feel hungry anymore?
Probably. And then you die.
Oh, also one thing that I should say on just before I forget, because this has happened since before the last reboots we've done. I have started a new little audio blog on my website. Have you seen it? I think you. I assume so.
No, I'm a listener. I love it.
Yeah, so it's a little bit like I did something like that on Gemini, didn't I? And but so basically, my sort of work schedule at the moment, and this will probably help us with freebooters a little bit, getting freebooters back on track, is I now work a 4 hour day, a 4 day week. So, and I'll know what times, I've got a schedule now that I've passed all the training and done all that stuff. So that's a decent amount of time to so we I'll even probably have time forthcoming for to get back into Divinity. I
Yeah, we need
mean
to get back into the community, and I
absolutely.
would also having watched the Unguided Morrowind thing. I want to pick up. I know we've picked it up like 3 times now, but I want to pick up the multiplayer Morrowind.
Absolutely. I'm always down for that. And do you have any quest lines in mind that you fancy? Carrying
Kind
on
of
with
like what
the
we were doing before. We're sort of doing the religiously ones. I think just doing the ones that people less commonly do, I think, is interesting.
Maybe here's a thought. This is a less common one as well, is finding the artifacts for the museum in Mournhold.
That could be fun. Yeah, getting all of them.
Or how about this? But this is a bit more of a challenge. Getting all the artifacts in Mournhold, but starting as a level one.
How do you mean?
So we start off as level one characters and then go
Yeah.
straight new
Are we going
characters.
straight from one hold? No, that'd be great.
That would be difficult, but then maybe we just have to,
In fact, maybe level from we start as level one characters and then just try and finish Tribunal.
God, that'd be so
That could be
difficult.
interesting. Like, that would be really hard.
Yeah.
But with two of us, we might be able to finagle something.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Oh, yeah. With two of us, actually, that makes a point. Yeah, that's a point. We can.
Yeah. Might have to lean magic or something. Yeah, no, I think that'd be interesting. Because Tribunal is kind of like the overlooked part of Mor it was the worst of the two editions for sure. But
But
it's got some very interesting stuff about it.
it had some of, in arguably some of the best bits in it, though. The museum quest. What was that? The terrorism guys in it. We foiled them ages ago.
The
Or
terrorism
like,
guys?
no, is it the resistance fighters or something? The little resistance quest line.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, some of the around town quests, like the main quest, I found a bit like meh. But like everything other than the main quest in Mournhold was actually pretty solid, if you ask me.
No, it was almost leaning towards what they were going to do with Oblivion. Like it felt the world felt a bit more, because Morrowind's world doesn't feel alive in that sense.
No.
Like, not on the, in the superficial sense. And Mournhold, yeah, very much feels like sort of bustling and lively and lots of quest givers and stuff.
I have on occasion tried to get some mods in Morrowind to make it feel a bit more lively. And it can do, it can do. But the trouble is with mods is that you're always fighting a mountain of bugs at that point, especially if you the more you put on. And
But I
it
also think I think Morrowind feels alive in a more substantial way. Like it feels culturally alive in a way that the later games lacked. But yeah, that superficial liveliness, yeah, it'd be interesting to
Like with Morrowind, you'd go to somewhere like Molag'mar, where you there aren't that many quests in Molag'mar, if I remember correctly.
No.
And then you'd find that like there were things going on, and yeah, admittedly it was just text, but it was distinct from every other place. Like with Oblivion, you'd go in and go, oh, this is like standard village number three.
Yes, yeah, very much so. Everywhere felt very distinct. And I mean Molag'mar, it's a very tiny settlement, right? But you've got the temple with the asteroidy thing that's above Vivec, but and then the what they called Dromora, that you in the Tribunal quest, you have to like insult him or something, don't you? And he's just like, because you're role playing something that Vivec did with the Dromora Lord. and he's just this Tremora, who's clearly a slave essentially, is just going through the like, yeah, okay, fine, you challenge me, you're so big and brave, like, yeah.
Yeah, like he's doing it for the tourists.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, there's just little bits of... Yeah, I always think if they just made Oblivion but followed the exact Morrowind principles, it would have been legendary.
Yeah.
The trouble is, they did have a lot of ambitions for Oblivion, but they were curtailed a lot by the voice acting, because the voice acting took up so much disk space...
Yeah,
they had to cut back on everything else. And
I mean, voice acting for me, I'm hostile to voice acting at this point. Text is better,
especially with Oblivion, where you've only got three fucking voice actors anyway.
I love how much that bothers you.
That is.
It doesn't bother me as much as it bothers you.
There's like three distinct faces, and there's like three distinct voices.
It's also, like, I think part. It's like there's three distinct voices, and two of them are kind of fucking annoying as well as part of it.
Yeah. Oh man, it's just like it is one of my favorite games of all time in the world, but
yeah.
But it
never gave me that feeling though. Like again, like Morrowind, barely any voice acting, but it did that thing where people would respond to you with voice lines when you walk past them or something. They would respond to you with voice lines that were. Essentially how they responded to you vocally was determined by the clothes you were wearing and their faction relationships.
Yeah. And sometimes so your skills.
And sometimes what, sorry?
Your skills. If you had a skill above 80, they would sometimes remark on that.
Oh really? Okay.
I think that's Morrowind. It might just be Oblivion actually. I can't remember. Oh, I don't know.
Skyrim does that, but I thought Skyrim was the first. Anyway, but you walk into it in the beginning of the game when you've just got off the boat, you're in rags, you walk into a place and you feel out of place because of the things people are saying. Like, I can't remember the ones they say when you're, but you know, it's just like, who's this cunt basically?
Yeah.
And then like 30 levels later, you walk into a place and they're like, wow, nice to see you, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that feels good.
Yeah.
It's really. Voice acting used for something rather than just like, you know, exposition.
Yeah. And what else was it? Your fame. So like your
fame.
Although, or reputation, I think it was in Morrowind. But in Oblivion, you had fame and then you had infamy.
Yeah.
And I actually really quite like that system. So if you were doing a Dark Brotherhood or a Thief... Well, actually, I don't know if you even know if Dark Brotherhood had any effect. But if you're doing like a Thieves Guild quest or something, you'd get you get infamy up as well. And there would be certain...
The Elder Scrolls games always... I think I always find myself like... I mean, maxing isn't the word, but it's like semi-exploiting, which I don't think is a problem. It's what the games are made for. But like, as soon as I knew that the... what's the cowl called of the Thieves Guild cowl thing?
Oh, the cowl of the grey fox or something like that.
Yeah, the grey cowl. I think.
Oh, nocturnal shroud. That's it.
That takes on if you're wearing that.
Yeah.
The infamy goes on the cowl instead of on you.
Yeah.
So basically, as soon as you've got the cowl, you can avoid any further infamy.
Oh, okay. I didn't actually know that.
Yeah, it's really handy. And then if there's an infamy check that requires high infamy, you just slap on the cowl. A million infamy.
Yeah, but doesn't the cowl already have a shit ton of infamy?
I think maybe. Yeah, I can't remember honestly, but it seems like it would. Yeah, and then you just add infamy to it as you're doing quests, and you take it off, and the infamy's not on you, which is I love that as a mechanic.
Yeah, but you still end up with Thieves Guild infamy because you get the cowl at the end of the Thieves Guild, right?
Yeah.
But every infamy beyond that, so that would be I don't know.
You can do Dark Brotherhood without getting any infamy, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, do you get infamy for Dark Brotherhood? Like,
yeah, you get a lot for. I think you can get more for Dark Brotherhood.
Okay, I thought also, you might get nothing because it's like, you know, secretive and everything.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter, does it? That infamy, it doesn't matter whether people see you or not for the infamy.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, just.
Yeah.
Side back. So yeah, if anyone wants to check out like my little voice notes, just go to chrisware.wales, my usual website, and there'll be like a audio blog button or something, you know, link on there. It's RSS, and I also post it up on Mastodon as well, because that's actually kind of the nice thing about doing little audio files is you can kind of post them anywhere.
Yeah.
And like I stick them, usually stick them in the Discord or something like that, and then and then have the website as sort of like the archive of them. But also, since I've got like quite a lot of breaks in like, you know, Gloucester and other places, I might just start doing them there. So if anyone, you or anyone else, has ideas on, you know, anything to like sort of chat shit about.
Oh yeah, you need a thing where people send you questions or something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
you pull a random question and then you just do 5 minutes on it or something. Yeah, That'd be cool. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've got my email address, I think, is on my website now. So is the email address on the website, like a public-facing one? So I'll check that. And Discord is fine. Fediverse is fine.
That's something we could apply to freebies as well. Like if anybody in the audience like just wants us to talk about a particular thing or ask us, you know, what do you think about a particular thing? Like we'd love that, I think, right?
I think so, yeah, yeah. I mean, speaking of like current events and things that I imagine people want to hear our thoughts on, what about this Discord malarkey about, are they going to start asking everyone for ID or something? I mean,
it's already happened to me. I don't know if you've been caught by it.
I haven't, no.
Yeah, when somebody posted, jokingly, not like a pornographic image or something, and it was blurred out for me.
All right, yeah.
And I clicked on it, and it says I got to, you know, either do the face ID thing or give them documents or whatever. So that, yeah, obviously I didn't do that. I VPN'd and had a look, but yeah, because okay. I'm taking a stance of so when I started buying tobacco online, yeah, I had to prove my age, and that's not about the internet. That's just the law, and I'm fine with that. That makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. But I'm refusing to Steam because my Steam account doesn't have a credit card, mm-hmm, and that's what they use. That's what Steam is using for proof of age. It can only be a credit card.
Yeah, and nothing else. Card. I'm a bit disappointed with Steam on this one.
I assume it's just a stopgap until they come up with something better. But I had a conversation with support, and I said, "Look, my account is 18 years old."
Yeah.
And they were like, "Sorry, the only way we can do it is credit card." I was, you know, okay, fine. So now I've got. It's an absurd situation because I can't look at the store pages of porn games.
Mm.
But I can play the porn games that I own.
Yeah.
Which is fucking absurd. That's not... Anyway, my point is, I'm not going to engage with any of these prove your age things.
Mm-hmm.
If the choice is prove your age or don't use it, I'm going to not use it. I've decided to say it's not going to do anything. It's not a boycott or anything, but just for my own... Because I don't... Apart from anything else,
mm-hmm,
I don't like being infantilized in that way. Mm. But more than that, I don't think kids should be infantilized in that way. That's not the way to solve these problems. Don't treat the kids as like a separate class of people. They're people coming into their being. It's disgusting.
But you know, like that. You know, the conspiracy theory about all of this that I actually kind of give some credence to is that, you know, this like AI bubble thing that's happening. Like there's a lot of like artificial
forces. For AI.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a job for AI. Yeah, yeah, basically.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I think that's really what it fundamentally comes
down
to.
Well, Wing posted something interesting. There's another sort of like conspiracy theory as to... Mm-hmm. Let me just find it quickly and then summarize it because it's interesting.
I'll tell you what, just one second. While you go and find that, I'm going to pop us on pause and just run to the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, we're back. Have you found the thing from Wing?
I did. So in a nutshell, so advertisers are losing faith in like social media platforms as a good place to advertise because it, you know, it's all bots. Why pay money to advertise to bots?
Mm-hmm.
So this age verification and ID in general to prove that, so essentially it proves you're a human. It also gets them around the laws where you're not allowed to advertise to children. So you can now they can go, okay, no, but we know who the humans are. We can target advertising at them. So, you know, keep paying us money, please.
Did he post that in Discord?
He did, yeah.
Yeah, no, I read that. That's spot on.
And it goes without saying to the point where we haven't said it, but obviously the real reason for this stuff is just more surveillance. Like they just want to track people and, you know, it's nothing to do with protection of children, any of these other effects are, you know, side effects, but yeah, it's about surveillance.
Yeah, because if they wanted to protect, like, here's the thing, right? And we may differ on this opinion, but I think that there's a substantial argument to be made for banning social media for under 16s. That doesn't need age verification or shit like that. It's just a law, right? But and I like it would be a it protects the kids' law, right? You don't like the thing is it's the it's an obvious excuse for all of these sort of subversive.
Well, for me, I think I go like back a step. Like if we've created a web that has these fucking toxic fucking hell sites that we want to protect kids from. The problem isn't that kids can access the toxic hell sites. The problem is that these toxic hell sites are toxic hell sites, and we should do something about that. I would rather than banning social media for under 16s, I'd rather just ban social media or a certain definition of social media that that algorithmically attention economy driven, like just ban that.
Yeah. My specific beef is particularly with the algorithmic stuff. So I'm not plugged into a lot of it. The only social media I'm on is Fediverse and LinkedIn, but I log into LinkedIn like 3 times a year to update my professional stuff. Like it's
there's one thing that you could do which would fix virtually everything, which is just ban advertising online.
Yeah.
I mean, that would kill all the big social media sites, kill YouTube as well, like, which I'm fine with that as, I enjoy YouTube, but yeah, let's just go back to a homemade, homespun kind of internet that's smaller, there's less there, but what there is of quality and is made by people.
But also, I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but a good alternative to YouTube is podcasts. I know a lot of people that listen/watch us, they like a visual element to it. And that's not prohibited, with podcasts. There are video podcasts that don't use YouTube. I think that it is an incredibly powerful and successful thing that we have done to keep podcasts alive in a decentralized way.
It's actually kind of amazing, isn't it? Yeah, they've not been captured. It's sort of, iTunes gets a lot of it, Spotify gets a lot of it over time. They've got more, but it's still a thing that could very easily escape that.
Yeah, and also, sure, you've got the RSS subscriptions, you've got various directories of podcasts and all that kind of stuff, and that's great. But also, at the end of the day, you can just visit a website and press play. I know it doesn't make it as on your plate discoverable or links in social media or whatever. Like it's so adaptable in that regard.
Well, I've been thinking about this a lot, right? And the discoverability thing. Mm-hmm. Like I still get most of the things that I watch are recommended by people I know.
Yeah.
Very, very little of my actual recommendations or at least discovering new things comes from recommendation algorithms. Most of it comes from people.
Yeah.
So and that would work the same, whether it's centralized on one site or not.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that gets recommended to me through the Fediverse that I
I would count as. I think I'm backing off from. I don't think, like, full respect to the project, but I don't think PeerTube is what we want to do instead of YouTube. I think I'm backing away from the idea of everything being federated. I think there's a value to when I think back of like what I think of as the ideal internet, and a lot of that was like web forums, and they weren't federated, they weren't connected to each other, and then being sort of like semi-isolated little, like they were still public, you could get to them, but they weren't, everything wasn't connected to everything, so there was a bit of isolation, and that I think there's value in a little bit of isolation, not complete isolation, but there's value in being a little bit disconnected from everything. And I'm thinking that in terms of I'd love to see a world where what Wing is doing it, where you just, if you've got videos, just put them up on your own site.
Yeah.
Maybe they've got to be a bit smaller. Maybe they're, if it's not something where the detail is particularly important, maybe it's 480 and, blah, blah, blah. I'd rather have, you visit your friend's site and it's got their videos on it.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather have that than PeerTube. And I think, and I've sort of backed away from, I've not really been on Mastodon lately. And I think it's partly that, I'm sort of, yeah, turning away from federation, and partly just it's full of fucking liberals now. The two or three Twitter exoduses just meant it's fucking 90% liberal shit, lib brain tape.
That would be, just as a side note, all of my videos, wherever they may be, I've popped them. You can get to them on my website in the video archive where I've just slapped them on filing. So.
Cool. Yeah.
It's video archive. So basically, just as a side note, not to self plug too much, everything about everything you can find on that I'm doing and all that kind of stuff, it's just on my website. That's my...
Yes, that's good. That's good. I mean, there's points, you know, depending on what you do, there's a point at which that would be expensive. But I think the point at which really, for most people, that matters, like, you've probably got enough people to do, like... Because I like Patreon as a model of fun. Or Patreon that didn't take a profit would be ideal. But, you know, that model of... Rather than, you know, sponsorships, rather than YouTube, I like the idea of, yeah, you, people who enjoy your stuff just give you a bit of money,
yeah,
and then the stuff is available for everybody. Like, and you could do that through your own website. I could pay for your hosting costs.
Well, I think it's an anonymous donation, but I get about €9 a month from LiberaPay. I don't think know who that is.
That's enough for a bit of storage. Or
no, that covers it all. That covers it all.
Yeah, right.
So,
right.
Well, because the video archive is just done on the File and Lifetime plan, which I got on Black Friday for a steal. Yeah. So that's basically free hosting for the videos. The Hetzner Freebooters server is about, what's that, it's less than £5 a month. And that holds Freebooters stuff, all of my stuff, anything. If you ever want to use that for anything, by the way, Drew, it's yours for the
take. I think I want to set up a forum. I think I want to do a forum.
Yeah, if, totally.
If that's okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll give you a psudo login.
Cool.
A root login or whatever. You know what I mean. A login with root privileges, and you crack on with any of that. And if it needs to be bigger, like I've done all the pricing. I'll happily pay for any expansion on it as well.
I don't think it will be. I mean, these web forums used to run on, you know, 90s servers. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, we'll be fine. But I mean, it's really more for my my audio stuff. But even that's like audio is so small compared to video.
You can make videos very small. It depends on the video, but like.
Yeah.
Because it's YouTube and because it's free, we've gone excessive with the bit rates and the, you know, not everything needs to be that high quality.
No.
I mean, you know that feeling when you go to watch something on YouTube, you search for a video, and the only video is like 12 years old and it's 480.
Yeah.
And you're like, ugh, smear. Horrible. And then 2 minutes later, you've forgotten. You're not noticing that anymore. It's that. It doesn't really matter for a lot of stuff.
Mm. But to be fair, just going back to what you were saying about PeerTube, like to be honest, I'm somewhat on the same page a little bit with the Federation, because it seems like a really complicated way to do something that I'm sure, like something like RSS feeds, is simpler. Like
Just people collect, like, oh, you like science videos? This is a collation of all the science videos from all over the place. And like, then they do an RSS feed for it or something. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Just people doing it, you know, not necessarily automated.
Well, I've been mucking around with Bash. I need to get back into that when I get a moment, because I did for a while have a little aggregate website. It was where what happened to freebooter.uk, where I think it was like Ghosties, mine, yours, and Wings. Websites would just like, there was just like a little RSS feed, and you click on it would just take you to the website. And
it's funny you say that. I've done it because, as mentioned, that I'm not really going on Fedi anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like a last tab on my browser. I like, because I don't really keep, I know most people have like a lot of tabs open all the time. I don't. Like, I read something, then I close it. And I always want a last tab that's something I can just sort of like scroll down and look at. What I've done is basically just what you were describing. I'll show you.
What do we got here?
So it's basically just a periodically generated link.
Is that the right thing that you meant to put in? Oh, no, that's the Wings thing. Oh, wait. Oh, you're screen sharing.
Yeah. So it's just so every two hours, basically, it's just a list of RSS feeds, and it just pulls all the links and puts it into an HTML file, and that is now my like homepage or whatever. So it's like all of the stuff that I'm going to add to this. There's not many RSS feeds in there at the moment, but yeah, just all, you know, it goes back a long way. But it's just stuff from YouTube, which I use your site to figure out how to do that with the RSS. Mm-hmm. Podcasty stuff some web stuff, and it's just a bunch of links for me to look at, and I'm finding that much healthier than even Mastodon.
I mean, Mastodon,
very, very much what you were just describing, just like just my own sort of, I've tried to use RSS feeders and stuff, and they just, something doesn't click with me with them, but this makes sense to me.
Oh, do you know what? Okay, going back to phones and how much you hate them, right? So yeah, there's a lot like with the bus driving thing. There's a fair amount of waiting around, usually at break times. My RSS feed and RSS reader is an absolute lifeline. Like I'll scan the Feddie a little bit, but to be honest, just opening up the RSS, there'll be an article there that I can read all the way through that will be interesting. They're great on phones, to be honest. Because like as much as I like Newsboat, someone said NewsRaft was something to look into, but I found Newsboat to be ideal the way I set it up. But it's very rare that I'm sitting at my computer wanting to read. The
I think
phone
that's what
seems
I
to work
found. I
better.
think it didn't really fit into the way that I use the web and use my computer and stuff. Whereas, I mean, really, this homepage thing that I've got now is exactly the same thing, but just the fact that it's in a browser, it's my last tab. So it's sort of, I automatically see it when I've closed every other tab and I'm ready for something new, perhaps. And I just scroll down. I'm like, oh, that looks interesting. And I click on it and it's nice.
So how did you
But
make it then?
it's just a bash script that on a systemd timer, every 2 hours, I've got a file with just a list of RSS feeds in it, and it just pulls them all until it turns it into HTML.
Damn, I might have to,
With, as you'd expect, a really disgusting sed statement.
Oh my God, I'm still awful at sed. Oh God. I want to be good at it because I love making stuff with bash. Like I don't know what it is. But it's just like I'm really happy with one thing I have changed with what's it? Plock? Is that the what? Plock. Yeah, Plock. Is that I've made it so that it only supports MP3s now.
Oh, really?
I've actually taken a feature out. The reason for that is because, first of all, anything other than an MP3, I always struggle to find like universal compatibility. Like my TV reads something like it reads Opus dot not OGG. My phone reads OGG but not Opus. So if I'm looking for like a free format, sometimes, and I think you mentioned this, is like, oh, it's just it's a file name thing. So if you just do dot MP3, you know, and to be honest, the file size isn't different. MP3 is a patent-free codec. It's completely universal. I thought, you know what? For the sake of, because Opus is a great codec. It's absolutely like it squashes the file size down great. And you can get great quality for voice, and you can get it for music as well. Like it is just a great codec for lossy formats. But it falls down on the and even like so WhatsApp use Opus for their voice notes. So if you ever like the WhatsApp voice notes are incredibly tiny. Like they are. If you ever like record one, then you can download it. Check out the file size, it's absolutely tiny. And they use the Opus codec. It's absolutely great. I think there are other it's used a lot for it's used for Discord as well. So Opus is like technically like fantastic, but it just for podcast use doesn't quite have that and usually the reason for its lack of compatibility is just someone somewhere has forgotten. That's usually the issue.
Yeah,
It's
or they've
not.
done things the easy way or the obvious way, like with the TVs and that. It's
It's just something that's just got skipped out somewhere. So, but also, so the different formats have different ways of storing the metadata. So, as you know, we pull the metadata down from the file, which is good because it also means that you as a podcast creator have to make sure your metadata makes sense because when it goes into podcast apps, then the metadata is also read by the podcast app. So it's a good habit to get into to make sure your metadata in your MP3 file or whatever is correct. But different formats have different ways of doing metadata. So MP3 has a specific like way of doing it. Opus does it on like the first audio stream or no audio stream zero. And OGG does it, but and how FFmpeg or FFpro read it is also distinctly different as well. So you've got to like mash all that into your bash script. So for the sake of supporting all of the formats, it's a lot of extra loops that it has to do, and it slows down the whole generation process as well. So just to have it on MP3, which just cuts out so many things that can potentially go wrong, makes the script a little bit shorter, easier to understand, all that kind
and
of stuff.
It's maximum compatibility. Like anything that can, it's going to play any kind of file, it's going to play MP3. So, and like you say, it's not like they're patent encumbered anymore.
And also I did a side script, which is also I think in the same repository, and what that does is that it extracts all of the metadata into files. So it'll be like, say you got like podcast1.mp3, you run the script on it and it'll be podcast1.title, podcast1.description. So then what you can do is you can, particularly with the description, you can fill out the description and then run the script again to make that description file the description for the MP3. You can put it back into the thing.
That's cool.
You don't need to do that. There's many other tools about that do it, but it just, and you can do it on mass as well. So that's, you can do, you know, you can extract it *.*, or whatever, and just goes zoom, or *.mp3 or whatever, you know, and then so if you want the same description for a whole bunch of files, you then just duplicate that description or whatever. And then just, you know, and that's a separate script. So it has nothing to do with Plock. It's just a way to, particularly because with descriptions, you can use like FFmpeg to do the description, but then you've got to do like, you've got to make it a separate file and then rename the file. There's like a whole bunch of steps. So the script just automates all of that and just makes it easier to edit the key bits of the metadata, really. But, you know, you could do it in Audacity. You can do it with FFmpeg. There are specific command line tools, but what you really just want is a bash script, to be honest. And then I can stick it on the server and then do it straight on the server. I don't have to like have it do it locally or anything.
That makes perfect sense.
And then I've got Plock on the server as well. So all I got to do, upload the MP3 file, then just run Plock through SSH and then zoop. I'm really happy with that. We've done that sort of.
And I think it's. I think we've. When I say we, I don't mean just you and I, but like people who know this stuff. We've settled on a sweet spot between automation and manual, I think.
Yeah.
Like we went way too far the other way, you know, with everything being database driven, SQL driven, like generating a static site essentially for every visitor from a database, completely pointless. And I love that the tool that we're using for it is Bash. It is very good at that kind of thing.
Yeah, I couldn't ask for anything cleaner, to be honest. And it's easy to pick up as well, because the concept of Bash is it's just a list of instructions that you could put into a command line.
Yeah, the fact that it's just stringing together the command line tools that you, as a Linux user, if you're engaging with the terminal, you learn bit by bit, so you're just naturally learning.
So not to sound too corny, but it's like you're limited by your imagination. It's very like creative in that regard, because the technical side of it is very self-explanatory, and so you've just got to think.
It's very different from like if I, you know, and I've thought about it like occasionally, I'm like, I should learn C. But learning C is this big daunting thing where I've just got to go and read and just make, whereas Bash is, it does feel like, it feels more, like you say, like creative, experimental, more like a language, more like learning a language, you know, a natural language. Just and stringing, also, bringing things together and building that vocabulary.
And it's script, you know, it's a scripted language, you know, where so you don't have to compile it, so you can tweak it, change it, and it's a living piece of software, as it were. So it's I don't know. I find it really scratches that creative itch for me, to be honest.
Same, it's one of the ways that I relax. It's like having a little thing that, you know, I keep a stockpile of little things I want to do in Bash, and feeling a bit stressed, and you know, start making it, and it's fun.
I might try and do, well, we were originally going to do a little was it like competition or project where we try and do, get a Bash script to, what was it, like download a website or something,
I remember we talked about like doing a get like a game or something, didn't we?
Oh, a bash game.
Like having a little sort of like Well, I think it was just like for us and for the community, just make a game and something, you know, open source, obviously. And yeah, it could be a little text adventure or you know, something like that. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah. See, again, this is where I fall down because it's like I think I know Bash well enough to put something like that together, but like a game with choices and
no, I have the same thing. Obviously, I play a lot of games, so I, you know, and I'm very conversant in game language. Like I understand games. I've been playing games for a long time, and I play a lot of them. But I cannot, for the life of me, design a game.
No.
I can't think of how should the systems work, and like I don't have whatever part of the brain that does that is. Mine is weak. I don't have that capability. But I could maybe do like a little text adventure.
Yeah, one of the Twitch streamers that I on occasion watch designs like board games and role playing games just, you know, for
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, no, that's mad to me.
And
yeah,
that's just like,
yeah,
it's absolute, like, incredibly impressive as far as I can tell.
Mm.
It's just a shame Twitch, man, because it's rubbish. Oh, I wish I liked. So we've got. So recently, just a bit of backstory for people listening, we've switched servers from DigitalOcean to. Is it Hetzner?
Yeah.
Yeah, which are very good, actually. So I do, you know, I do recommend them. They're the ones that, like, most people in the Freebooters Discord use, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think Wing Ghosty, and they use Hetzner.
Yeah, yeah, they're very, very good from what I've. From my current use so far. I think they're cheaper than DigitalOcean, and they offer more space off the bat. But then they've got plans for additional storage, which I think just mounts a device on that is like the storage device, and then you just use it as a mounted storage device. So if we ever need more space like that, then we can do something like that. And it's incredibly reasonably priced and straightforward. And so, yeah, but it took me a little while to get stuff set back up, just because I had to sort of build it bit by bit from the ground up. Moving the sites over, I did in an hour, because it's
yes,
just,
yeah,
that bit's easy. Yep. But the
that
bit,
would have been, again, if your site, if this had been 15 years ago and your site was generated from an SQL database, that would have been, I mean, still perfectly doable, but such a pain in the fucking ass. Like getting SQL running, like doing a dump and then pulling that dump up and then getting it working. It's horrible. And when it's just copy these files to the server, it's so fucking clean and easy.
Yeah.
Like it's liberating. For anybody who's worked on that web from that era with the database stuff, it's fucking liberating to just copy some files and it works.
But the one job I kept putting off, even though, again, this is also a very easy job, was getting Owncast back going. I don't know why I put it off for a couple of weeks or something. I guess
it's a little bit daunting, even though it's a very good install script on that thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I do it super manually. I get the executable. I put it in what's the special drive thing. You know, the put it in the folder. I create a specific user for it and a group. Which you don't have to do. Like, I don't think most people do, but you know. And then I, then I do the systemd, thing, which again, not everyone does. Sometimes people just leave it up and running. But it's the systemd thing, which is really good because it means if it crashes, it restarts in 5 seconds or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's quite nice. It makes it a little bit more bulletproof. Anyway, it's up and running now, so we should stream whenever we get a chance. It's the same address, live.freebooters.uk, but I might have lost some subscribers. So some people on the Fedi might be subscribed and then need to like unsubscribe and resubscribe or something.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
I could have given it a different URL, but honestly, like for the, I don't know, it felt wrong. So,
yeah, is that's the correct URL.
Yeah, live.freebooters.uk. That's, you know. I've done a little bit of I've given it a dark mode.
Yeah.
I apologize if in advance if I've like if there's something, you know, if I've made dark background on dark text or whatever it is, because what butchering CSS is like, but I think it looks all right. But
I have some sort of Wales news.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
not really Wales, it was kind of Wales. So I have a phone, and the only reason I have a fucking phone is that when I'm trying to log into my bank website, the only way they will authenticate me is by sending me an SMS, and then you type in the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Literally the only, and the same with the government stuff.
Yeah,
that's literally the only reason I have a phone. And I got I was on Tesco Pay As You Go because they didn't seem to care that I'd never put any money on it ever.
Uh-huh.
Then I got a message a bit ago saying we're changing our whatever, we're doing a new thing where blah blah blah, this thing that you're on won't exist anymore, blah 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 blah. So I was like, okay, I need a new pay as you go SIM card where they don't give a fuck if you never update it never put any money on it. And I found one called, I don't know if you've heard of them, RWG Mobile.
I have not heard of them.
Okay, so they're Welsh. When I went to the website, it was that.wales, and I filled in the thing, ordered the SIM. It costs £1, and they send you a SIM. And then the SIM arrived with a little letter with like instructions on it. And then when I was done reading the letter, I just turned it over in my hands, and on the back is the same letter in Welsh. Oh. And I was like, "That's fucking cool."
Yeah. Okay, I'm looking at their website now.
It is just bottom end. You're an absolute cheapskate. You don't really need a phone, but you need a phone because everybody needs a phone. It's they're very much geared towards that, I think.
Yeah,
which is just smart. That's a big fucking market, especially these days.
Well, I mean, it's £2 a month for 100 minutes, 100 texts, 750 megabytes of data.
Yeah, which for most, right? Again, all your boomers and Gen Xers probably is like, that's all we need.
We don't need this stuff. Yeah. Oh, damn.
But okay. You can pay a pound for the SIM card, and then so long as it's just incoming stuff, it should, it work. They don't seem to have a minimum. You don't have to do, because a lot of the pay as you go ones now, they're like, you have to put some credit on every 30 days or 90 days or whatever. And the least credit you can put on is £5. So,
Yeah, I'm on 1P Mobile, which was sort of like my same rationale as yours. It's like, well, they're likely to be the cheapest. Except you now have to put a minimum of £5 a month on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, Christ. I mean, so at the moment, I'm probably using a lot of that because of data. Because, I'm out and about, so...
Yeah, yeah.
So that's not too much of a problem. But so it's 20, best value, 20 gigs of data, that's £12 a month.
They do so much. Because I know it's basically, you can just... So with this, it's all very overly complicated, but essentially you can just accept their basic, calls cost this much, SMSs cost this much, data costs this much, and just top up a cash amount. You can do that.
Yeah.
Or you can, what you're looking at is these little packages where it's like £5 and you get like all of this, or, £10 and you get all of this. And there's some that are data only,
okay,
which is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I need a bit of phone because...
Yeah, yeah. I don't leave the house, so I literally don't need... I hate that it's the only way for certain things to authenticate. Like, because if it weren't for that, I would not need a phone.
Yeah, no, I don't like the... I don't like phones. We can do better. We can do better. Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, that's good to know. Do you know, actually, because I live and work in England now. It's
You're living in England?
Yeah, yeah, I live with Rosie.
Oh, shit. Oh, are you all right?
Well, interestingly enough, we're only just on the other side of the line. Like, we're really, it's a very...
on the border.
Fundamentally, I've moved, like, about 5 miles, so it's not too bad. However, like, I can literally walk, back over the border. But
if needs be.
I got to be honest, like, there is a... I do kind of miss the bits of Welsh... The bits that Welsh, like the smallest of, like, there are like lots of like micro mannerisms and stuff, or like,
I feel the way, this is even more stupid. Hmm. I feel the same way between like Staffordshire and Derbyshire. Like, I'm literally on the border. Hmm. And if I travel, 10 minutes in that direction, I'm in Derbyshire. Obviously, I haven't been for a while, but yeah, it just felt different. People behave slightly differently. It's so strange.
Like, I don't, like, no offense to the English here, because
Oh, no, and maximum offense to the English. They deserve it.
There is, and again, I don't want to be too general or anything like that, but there's like this general aura of like Englishness that makes me a little bit like well, it's my right. Why shouldn't I? You know, it's just even nice people have it. Like it's a.
We've still got that mentality of being an imperial core,
the
core province of a globe-spanning empire. We still have that, and it's a real problem.
And it's so subtle in a lot of ways. It's just this little bit of sort of like wall-building mentality, you know, just a little bit like a little bit separate. I want to be a little bit separate from everyone. Although one of the things I absolutely love about the bus and the people that ride the bus. Which is a little bit less than what I mean. So there's a little bit of a class thing here as well.
Yeah, it's definitely in second class, yeah.
But, like, I love the fact that every single person I work with on a day-to-day basis on the buses does not feel that they're too good to ride the bus.
Yeah, like, right,
There is a genuine sense of, like, down-to-earthness and even, like, I don't want to even say, like, humility because that feels a bit condescending, but, like, there's a genuine sense of, like, what's the opposite of being up your own ass? Like whatever the opposite of that is.
I think probably not the word you're looking for, but I think it's this applies to what you're saying about how people are always like it's like a sort of a comradeship. Like we're all in this together.
Because to be honest, one of the things it's made me like people more being on the buses, right? Like that's one of the things is because like people chat on the bus and it's lovely, like. There is a sense of community on the bus that I have, like, yeah, I get the bus from time to time, but in all honesty, when I get the bus, I just sit down somewhere quiet and stick my earphones in and listen to a podcast, right? I'm not part of that solution, as it were, like, but a lot of people, they just come out, they just have a natter. And I love that. Like, I love the fact that people get to know each other.
This, you know, 90s since I've been out in the world, but like one of the things I used to always love about the buses and train, and this doesn't apply in London, they're not like this in London, but just sitting on the bus, like you go and sit next to somebody or they sit next to you and just having a chat with them, just get to know somebody while you're on a journey, you know, like, find out a little bit about their lives. And it's just nice in its own right, just having a chat, getting to know somebody, but it opens your eyes to different ways of, you know, you can't have that experience and then be like a Tory. Do you know what I mean? Because you see too much of other people's lives. That's what breaks down those barriers is seeing insights into other people's lives. And when it happens just organically in an enjoyable way like that, I think it's incredibly valuable. And it's essentially the thing that Thatcher destroyed in this country. Yeah. You know, just that sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And I to be honest, I'm becoming a little bit of a bus radical. Because the thing is, I talk to a lot of people, and a lot of people have like various different beliefs. Like I talk to a decent amount of reform voters, and sometimes I like to throw in a little, not a crazy view, but and see what they react to. And one of the things I go, well, to be honest, I think everyone should just ride the bus for free. I know it's a bit crazy, but what the hell, right? Like, you know, do you know how many people who. I wouldn't say there's like reform's a bit new for this, but like there are like people that flirt with the idea of reform because they've been tantalized by something in it.
Yeah, well, it's very similar to Trump.
Yeah, they're
the only ones who are proposing doing anything, and at the moment, I think people are just so tired of politics as it's been for the last 30 years. They'll vote for, even if it's stupid, they'll vote for just somebody who seems like they want to do something.
Yeah,
and the problem. Yeah. This is going to be a little bit, I'm going to rant for a little bit, right? But I was talking to Andrew earlier, and I was saying, like, a lot of, like, you know, Labour and Tories, or, you know, the softer end of Tories and the right end of Labour, they will probably describe themselves as centrist, right?
Yeah.
But all, and, you know, same for the Democrats in America, and then, the more moderate Republicans, they probably describe themselves as centrists. Mm-hmm. But they're not. the kind of politicians who describe themselves as centrists or explicitly occupy that space, they're not representing the political centre anymore. I literally typed this to Andrew earlier, so I'm going to... What I think the political centre is, as in, you know, just person on the street, interview 100 of them, what is their average, you know, when you're talking about policy, not about, you know, take the parties out of it, what do they actually want in terms of policy? And I think they're accepting of everybody's rights to be... Mm-hmm. Regardless of like identity categories, sick and alienated by, you know, the language policing, the purity checking, the euphemism treadmill, not particularly interested in being political. They want people to have rights. they don't want to be told how to talk, essentially, or think.
Yeah.
In favor of the basic, you know, the basic things that liberalism gave us, you know, like education, free speech, free press, all that stuff, they're in favor of that. And then economically, quite left. Tax the rich, tax profits, nationalize the utilities, you know, more spending on social good. That, I think that is the political center.
Yeah, no, right, I would agree with that, yeah.
And there's no party in you know, in the Anglosphere, for sure, representing that position. I think that's where most voters are, and there's no party representing that.
You would say that the Lib Dems are to the right of that, right?
Oh, I think the Lib Dems will be to the right of that on economics, and would be more identity politics centred rather than, you know, actually caring about just giving people fucking legal rights and shut up about the language.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. I gotta be honest, the Lib Dems have been so fucking quiet these days, I don't know where they are.
What the fuck they're about.
Yeah, they've probably moved all across the political spectrum at this point, we've just not known it.
The Greens, and I think the Greens are going to do very well, or, you know, they're already doing well. Yeah. The Greens are almost there, but they've still got that, like, you know, that left liberal identity politics stuff. Like, we've got to, not the spirit, like the intentions of the ID politics stuff, the intentions of woke, 100%. Absolute rights, people should not be mistreated in any way. But it's the chastising, you know, you said it the wrong way, you must be a fucking fascist. All that shit needs to be dropped hard.
Yes. I mean, I think that Zach Polanski's doing a decent move in that direction.
Yeah, I think people are, this isn't like a, you know, something I uniquely have realised. Yeah, I think it's a direction that we are starting to go
but
on.
Also, yeah. But also, it is something like, it's a little bit like the media can be a little bit of a problem in this regard, because the second you start calling out actual fascism, then they start throwing toys at the pram and start being like,
but
you're right about the all the language policing and stuff like that, especially considering that, like, in the UK, stuff is so, like, language in particular is so regional. Like, what is offensive in one part of the UK is not going to be offensive in another part. And also, people on the whole, they're not really that easily offended by language as well. Like, I think it's...
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, 10 years ago, you'd say privilege, easy for us to say blah, blah, blah. But even taking that into account, I would say that if it's a joke, whether it's offensive or not is up to that group. That is not an objective thing. You can't objectively say you're not allowed to joke about this, you can joke about this. That is down to that particular friend group, that particular social group, that particular social group. And if everybody's economically fine and doesn't have power over each other, then, you know, that it's not a matter of being scared to speak out, blah, blah. There's problems with that, for sure.
Yeah.
But it's nothing else is sane. You can't police what people... I saw it recently described as, and I think it fits what I well, there's a label for what I'm describing, and the label I heard was dark woke.
I've heard that label, or woke 2.0.
Woke 2.0. I like dark woke. Yeah, I'm not woke. I'm dark woke. So, like, joke about whatever the fuck you want. You know, if somebody says something that is unreasonable, or, you know, not you know, beyond the pale or whatever, yes. Call them out for it, but don't just use it as a way to flat, you know, to punish people and to feel superior to people and feel like you're the in-group, you know all the terms, they don't, they're stupid, they're, you know, they must be fascists because they didn't know to use this word instead of that word.
Yeah.
Like, that has alienated so many fucking people, and that's exactly what's pushed them to Trump, pushed them to reform.
Yeah, and I think that they farmed that a little bit as well, the right.
Absolutely. Yeah, they play on that. They play on that sense of alienation and
But also,
it's almost like a self. If you keep telling people they're fascists, when it comes, I'm a fascist, I probably should vote for the fascists, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, I mean, we haven't mentioned the Gorton and Denton by-election, but that is something that is kind. I think that's a thing. That's like okay. With UK by-elections, they often throw up odd results.
Yeah.
But this is the first time it's ever been this odd that it seems like it means something. Like Labour are fucking third, right?
Yeah.
Like that. Like Labour, just off on the face of it, need to go home and think about what they're doing.
The thing is, that's so utterly unsurprising. Like, yeah, often, as you say, often by-elections throw up odd results. That doesn't mean every result from a by-election is an outlier. They can be indicative of where things are going. And in this case, it matches, you know, makes sense. It's not like, oh, this is surprising. It's not surprising at all.
Yeah.
Like, Labour, even at the time of the election, even the mainstream media knew that Labour was getting such a high proportion of the vote because the Tory vote collapsed and went to split between Tories and Reform. That wasn't a mystery.
Mm.
People didn't like that version of Labour because their numbers were down from previous incarnations of Labour, including Corbyn. But it's just because the Tory vote collapsed.
Mm.
So the fact that Labour are doing so fucking poorly is the least, and given how fucking horrible they've been in office.
The mystery is, how have they been so horrible?
I occasionally go, what the fuck are they? But no, as soon as you realise they are now, they're beholden to the same donors that the Tories are. That's all it is. It isn't complicated. It's very straightforward. They're beholden to the same capital interests as the Tory. I mean, they've fully abandoned the Tories to come to Labour, honestly, to a large extent. I mean, they fund both. But they're beholden to those forces. They just are. They don't care what... I mean, everything. The economic stuff, you know, the benefits stuff, the Gaza stuff. Like, public opinion is so clear. They're not responsive to public... They don't care about public opinion.
The thing about the Labour Party,
the thing
about the Labour Party that puts this in black and white for me, it's so stark because it's so stark, is that the Labour Party membership are overwhelmingly in favour of proportional representation, like overwhelmingly.
It's one thing that the
Labour membership can just outright agree on, to the point where they've done it in Wales. So it goes a few rungs up the ladder in agreeability. Yet it doesn't even come, like, no Labour cabinet in recent times has even discussed it. And that to me is like that one disconnect is like symbolic of so much else, but it's just laid so bare there that it's something that the membership wants so badly that the leadership want.
Yeah.
What's the opposite? You know, like.
And the other one, that's almost equally as stark is the renationalisation thing. I mean, that's incredibly popular with people across the political spectrum, but it's basically 100% with Labour voters. You know, we want to renationalise the utilities. And again, not a fucking whiff of it from the parliamentary party.
Yeah, there's Reform voters that want renationalisation as well.
It polls, it's the same, similar things in America. Yeah, it's just that what would be considered quite significantly left-wing economic policies are popular when you present them outside of a party context. They're popular across the board in both countries.
Yeah. I think the thing about Reform that is worth noting is that they've managed to paint themselves as a party for the non-political.
Which
means that any Reform voter is, as far as I can tell, up for grabs for any of the parties almost,
They're voting Reform and, you know, Trump in America because they just want somebody who looks like they want to do something. Yeah. That's part of it.
I think what you often will say, I've heard you say in the Discord before, the importance of knowing like political frameworks and political theory. And I think Reform is the example of when people don't have that. And people don't care to want, like, you can't expect everyone to go out there and start reading, right? But, like, if you don't find a way to reach out to those people that don't have that framework, because...
Unions used to do it.
Yeah.
Unions used to fuck about it. Anyway, sorry, go on.
No, that's it. Like Reform is just, they capitalize on people's lack of political theory knowledge. And as you say,
It's politics as pure marketing.
Yes. Yeah.
It doesn't make any. If Reform were elected to the government with a decent majority, they would not function. The country would not function. What they have doesn't add up to a theory of political economy.
Well, we've already seen that. Is it like the Kent Council that they've got?
Squandered that.
Like they're just. But this is one of the problems, or not one of the problems I have with democracy, but one of the things about democracy that don't marry up is that being a good campaigner has nothing to do with being a good, statesman. Like the two are just
like administrator, even
exactly. So I don't even know how you fix that fundamental problem with democracy.
I mean, a big way is get the moneyed interests out of politics. And
if you get the moneyed interests out of politics, like, everything's hunky dory, really.
That's why I think the point about the political centre is so important, because just the vast majority of people, their political ambitions aren't even represented in a party that you can vote for. That's the fucking problem, and that's because of the money. You take the money out of it, and of course you want to win the most votes, so you do what is popular. And what is popular right now, I think, would actually be quite good.
Yeah. Yeah,
immigration would be like, definitely the public are, you know, but only because they've been force-fed this propaganda for, you know, 4 years. But immigration would be a problem. But putting that aside, I think what the average person wants is that, because they know their situation. People aren't stupid. They know their situations. They know what they need.
Yeah, yeah. But honestly, like, yeah, we've used a lot of words to basically just explain billionaires have fucked everything, really, isn't it?
Yes.
It really is that fucking simple, and it's
capitalism is the problem.
Yeah, yeah. It's capitalism run amok in particular. You know, like, yeah, don't get me wrong, yeah, I'm not defending capitalism, but like
you and I would be perfectly happy with social democracy. I assume
absolutely, I'd be perfectly happy with socialism. To be honest, I don't know if I call myself a socialist, but like, I'm not scared of it.
I'm communist, socialist, Marxist, you know, I'm on that end of the spectrum. But I would be, if we just had a 1970 Sweden style social democracy, I could live with that.
Yeah.
But the problem with that, as you know, as we've literally seen play out, is that will always, unless you get rid of capitalism, that will always drift. That will always be eroded. That's just built into the system.
That's if you allow the disease to exist, even in some small capacity, it's got the ability to go from benign to harmful. I don't think I even settle. Sometimes it depends what mood I'm in or something, where it's like, don't get me wrong, right? I think, you know, no one should be a billionaire. We should do away with the billionaires. They should not exist. That's an obvious one to me. And I'd even maybe even bring that bar a little bit lower, you know,
I think the billionaires is a good thing to sort of like motivate people around, but the billionaires aren't really the problem. The problem is what is taxed and what's not taxed. It's fundamentally not that tax is the solution in itself. But look at levels of corporation tax in the 70s, even in the 70s, which, you know, it's not that long ago.
Yeah.
Compared to now. And like, it was, I can't remember the actual numbers, but it was many, many, many times larger in the 70s. And that was a perfectly, capitalism can function under that, right? Yeah. You're not risking anything. And also just industrial policy, just not having housing be a speculative asset, and industrial policy to encourage companies to invest into productivity, not to do share buybacks and just things that inflate their share price, and, you know, investments in fixed assets. I'm babbling, but you get me. Like, we can arrange things to have, but again, that if that's all you've got to redo that every 10, 20 years is the problem, to take back what capitalism will necessarily claw back. And because they have control over the media and blah, 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 that becomes increasingly difficult, which is why fundamentally we need to get rid of capitalism. But if there were a party that could win, that was just offering social democracy, it's not like I would oppose them because they're not going the whole hog. That would be an immense improvement, and I would vote for that like with ecstasy.
Like my mindset is, let's pull left. I don't know when we stop. it's sort of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Let's just make things better. let's start there.
Yeah, I don't, because the thing is, I respect political frameworks and political theory, absolutely. You know, like, it's necessary, otherwise you do end up with too much sensationalism, short-term thinking, narrow thinking, all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I don't have a utopic vision. I just want to, like, well, you know,
yeah,
like...
Yeah.
But I want to sort the housing problem, want to sort the healthcare. I want, like, public transportation to fundamentally be free and readily available. Good education.
I talk about a lot. Catherine Liu, one of my favorite leftist thinkers, that's very much what she says. It's like we need to concentrate on the boring things. It's not exciting. It's not going to be revolutionary. It's not about, you know, uprising. It's, you know, in an American context, it's let's get free healthcare.
Yeah,
that helps so many people out. People see the benefit of social good versus blah blah blah, and that puts people on the right track. And then let's go, you know, tackle the next thing, and then the next thing, and you know, to a large. In terms of what's actually practical and achievable, I agree with that.
Yeah, like, you know, free childcare, free school meals as well, you know, all that kind of, like, you know, I mean, I don't think about that stuff a lot because I'm not a parent, but it is important because it's all investing in the long term. Like
right now, I mean, we're going to see the inflation from Iran, like price controls on food. That's going to be necessary, I think.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've got a full, like, mental manifesto. I might write it down about, like, pricing and shit like that, because I get buy one get one free. No, charge what something is worth. Give yourself a little markup, but then just be serious about it. Like, don't have coercive pricing.
That's another thing we used to have, even, you know, not that long ago, 70s-ish, is price controls on certain things that are essential for living. Certainly even the Tory government back then, even Nixon was because of the political culture he was coming out of. He was to the right, of course. He was a Republican, but he was a social democrat fundamentally, because that was what they had. Mm. You can only erode that so far, and you know, he was you know what I'm saying. It's
but also fundamentally, like, with the capitalism issue, of course, is like, because capitalism seems to me like it's a machine to centralize wealth. Like, the winner of capitalism is ultimately the Jeff Bezos that's got everyone else's money. Like, the aim is to get all of the money. And but the problems start coming in when people have enough money to be able to swing elections and influence things beyond what they should be.
We're also just, even on capitalism's own terms, that, I mean, Adam Smith, who sort of, like, invented capitalism, I'm saying that in a silly way intentionally, but even he, the very first one to sort of analyze this as a system rather than see it as something that was, you know, an uncontrollable force of nature, he understood that when you get to that point, when it's full rentier capitalism, that is harmful to capitalism. You know, he was pro-capitalism. He thought capitalism was good. He said, these things, if you've got a rentier capitalism, that's harmful to capitalism. If you've got too much monopoly, you know, too many big conglomerates buying everything, that's harmful to capitalism. Yeah. And it just Jeff Bezos having a shit ton of money, that's capitalism failing, because that money's supposed to be doing useful stuff.
Yeah. See, this is why, and I bring this out with reform voters a lot. I go, oh, so-and-so on benefits, or oh, so-and-so government projects, government spending money. And then I always throw it back and say, like, yeah, but, like, that money doesn't just gets, you know, disappear. Like, that provides jobs, that provides services, that goes back into taxes. Even if you're spending benefits, you're probably going to be spending some VAT. You know, it's all keeping
there's a term for it that I can't remember right now, but basically this is one of the things that I wish governments would talk about more. For every pound that government spends, they get £1.25 back, because it circulates multiple times and gets taxed.
Yeah,
it's not just like that money is spent and then disappears, evaporates. And especially if you're giving money to poor people, they're far more likely to spend it on physical goods, not on investments. They spend it gets taxed, they pay their staff, that gets taxed, that goes to the bank, that gets taxed, you know, the bank, they spend it on something else, that gets taxed. So the government, by spending money, not without exception, but broadly speaking, especially on giving money to poor people, if the government spends money, the government makes money. Also, this doesn't apply to the EU, but any government that has a reasonably strong currency and is in control of its central bank. I mean, this is what Trump supporters were sort of posting stuff like this when they realized this, when they took over the government. But you are the arbiter of how much money there is when you're in control of a central bank. You can, if the government wants to pay for something, they can just type an extra zero and say, we've got that much money, we've spent it. The problem is, if you do that too much, you get inflation, and that's what tax is for. Tax is for control. Tax isn't for generating money to spend. It's for controlling the inflation for the spending you've done. So the government just needs to spend money. And then tax profits. There's a sort of sloganized way of saying it: tax something, not labor. Essentially, meaning, you know, taxing capital gains and not work.
Also, I'm totally like I would totally like to see someone have the balls to put in a wealth tax. Like, you just have too much money. Let's take some of it away. Like, you shouldn't have that much. It's too dangerous.
In terms of I mean, I agree, but the big one is really corporation tax.
Oh, for sure.
Corporation tax is like so low to, like I say, where even where it was in the 70s. Let's take corporation tax back to a 70s level. That gives the government basically free rein to spend on whatever they like. And then we can start doing things that direct the economy in the right way, like, for example, a very harsh wealth tax, and definitely a cut-off point. If you've got this many billions, you just lose the top. You've got enough money to buy everything you possibly want for 200 lifetimes.
The only reason people like Bezos and Musk and Bill Gates and everything want the money they have is because they want to control the world. You know, the political power that comes with that amount of money. That's the only reason.
That is fundamentally not democratic.
No, it's the opposite. It's absolutely the opposite. Drew, I am I'm heading off with the friend of the show Carla in about a quarter of an hour. Go for a stroll and a
Nice. Hello,
coffee.
Carla.
So, we got a few minutes to wrap up. Is there anything that you wanted to get out before we go?
I did want to ask where those photos that you posted the other day
Oh,
were very beautiful, very dramatic. Where was that?
yeah. It's a place called Yacht Rock. And it was we go now. So because I am like a bus driver now, so I get up early in the mornings. Like my alarm goes off usually about 5 o'clock, sometimes like four. And then I go to bed really early. So we gotta bear that in mind for when we do stuff together. That like I mean it will make it work, but
In
yeah.
that sense of it, I mean, I rotate, but I lean towards, I like getting up in early morning, so that suits me.
So I'm now officially a morning person. So on and Rosie starts work at 9. So we've taken to when I have a weekday off, we go for a morning walk and. The sun had been up like an hour or so at this time, so the sun was in like full glare mode, but it was still dewy, so it was just like evaporating. All this mist was coming up off the fields, and it's quite a high little point that we were on, like quite a little overlook, not just down the road from where we live. And yeah, it was absolutely beautiful. It looked, obviously photographs never quite capture it the same as being there in person, but it was.
No, but it was stunningly beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous.
That's like
I
because
was just, yeah.
sometimes we
Because
talk
I'd
and
assume that's why I was a little bit surprised when you said you moved in, because that just looks, to me, that looks quintessentially Welsh.
well it is the why
Yeah,
so
right.
it's about it's the it's as close to Wales as you can get while still being
Yeah,
England. Like it's
right. Yeah, really beautiful, like magical.
yeah it felt magical there as well. Like it was it's lovely there. But when sometimes when we wistfully think about other places we'd like to live, we're very happy where we are. Like the Forest of Dean is absolutely beautiful. But because of my little, I don't know, like drawn to Welshness, or like I didn't even realize because it's not entirely a type of homesickness. It's something else. It's really subtle,
No, yeah, I know what you mean.
and it's a little bit like I just kind of miss being Welsh with Welsh people, and it's odd. And it's there's a softness and a warmness to Welsh people that I feel,
I agree. I, as somebody who, growing up, all our family holidays were in Wales for a very, many years. And yeah, Welsh, all the Welsh people we met, just not necessarily because we were English, polite all the time, but even when impolite, there's a warmth and a friendliness to it. It is like a camaraderie, comradeship. It's along those lines. It's a, I've got problems with you, but we're equals,
This is it's odd, and I maybe one day I'll work out a way to sort of explain it or something. But it's it's
I think you get something like it in working class communities in the Midlands and North.
oh yeah for
I
sure
don't think
yeah
you get it at all in the South,
no
whatever it is that we're trying to describe. But yeah, definitely more so in
yeah
Wales.
it's kind of weird because like it's very interesting where different parts of different routes that I do. People do change a fair bit, and it's interesting because there's like you got the South Herefordshire bit, which is like more interesting enough. It feels a bit more southern, even though it's a little bit north to us, but it's got that southern England vibe, which is I don't know. It feels a little. Oh God, I don't want to like get myself into any kind of trouble here, It feels a little bit more like English and proper in a but like in a nice but slightly colder way. Like it's, do you know what I mean? Like it's like everyone's very pleasant.
Well, this but is there something is that, like, it really surprises Americans that, like, if I travel 20 miles in one direction, the accent is completely fucking different.
Yeah.
Like, not just like, it doesn't, you know, it's not, I mean, it's gradual if you're actually traveling, but it's not a slight variation.
Mm.
Like, in America, you've got to travel a different coast to get a distinctly different accent. You know, you've got to travel virtually the whole, you know, 20, 30 miles here, it's a completely different accent.
Yeah.
And because we're so sort of compact and kind of weirdly atomized, we didn't have social mobility until very recently. And I think, like, a sort of perfect example of it is where I am. I'm in a little village in Staffordshire.
Mm-hmm.
A mile down the road is another little village of similar size, basically the same size. This is the working class village, and that's the posh village.
Yeah.
And they look down on us. They tell jokes about us because we're the, you know, the, and that's just two villages a mile apart that have this, you know, completely different. You go there and it's like, it feels posh, and that's nice in a way, but it's also, I feel a little bit out of place. I don't belong here.
Yeah, totally. Like, it is kind of, it's all kind of odd. Like, because, like, in the forest, it's a bit, it's like proudly more working class for the most part. And it's, I mean, there is a substantial middle class amount in the forest. You know, there are nice houses in the forest, but, like, I don't want to get myself in trouble, but there's like a scruffy working classness about it.
Yeah,
that is
yeah.
very yeah. like proud, you know, in how it is, in a way that it's, I don't know, it's like there are like so like there's so many distinct cultures in this, even this little area, because you've got Bristol, which is a whole different thing in and of itself. It's kind of like almost like metropolitan liberal hippie-ish. Not in a bad way, by the way. Like it's as far as cities goes, it is lovely, but it's also very corporate in a lot of places as well. Then you've got like the English side of Wales, so it's got like the subtle hints of Welsh, but at the same time, a lot of Welsh people would feel very, you know, feel like it's very English. You got the Forest of Dean and Gloucester, which is like it's the more rural side of Uwara West Country type of. And then you've got South Herefordshire just up there, which is where it starts to get a little bit posher and
posh farmer. I don't think other countries have this to the same extent, where you can just I mean it's our weird history combined with like the fact that we still have a fucking class system, a very sort of strong, we never had that Republican revolution, so we've the class system is still quite ingrained and still not ingrained isn't right, but lived, felt.
I mean it is a fundamental formal part of our societal structure.
Well, I may have said this before, but I've never felt more out of place in my life as a contrast, like I've gone to Bradford, into the areas of Bradford that are entirely West and South Asian, and, you know, gone into pubs and, you know, whatever, you know, felt perfectly at home. I went to Mayfair when I was down. I was just like, I want to see the posh part of London. I want to walk through it. Yeah. Never felt more out of place in my life. Never felt more like it wasn't anything. Yeah. Nobody said anything to me, but it's just I felt like Oliver Twist. You know what I mean? Like walking through the, it's just like they know I don't belong here.
Yeah. Oh, have I lost you, Drew?
No.
Oh no. Okay. Yeah. Do you know, interestingly enough, how because, like, you know, I go into Gloucester a fair bit now, which is decently more multicultural than a lot of the places that I've previously been. And one of the things I found to be quite pleasantly interesting is how much a lot of my like lifestyle values overlap with some of the Muslim lads there.
when I was 12, 13, I had decided that when I turned 18, I would convert to Islam. There was something I think I read about it. I think I got there via like Malcolm X and stuff, but then I read the Quran. And it's like, it's it's such a neat version of monotheism.
Yeah.
I respect its like cleanliness, its efficiency.
Yeah, for me, it's just a little bit like, because with amongst bus drivers, there are a fair number of like boomers, if I'm honest, which is fine, like it's okay, no problems there. But like the ones that just seem to like understand who I am as a person more do tend to be. It's like the sort of Muslims that are the same age as me who like, because they think a lot about what they eat and their impact on the world in a sort of spiritual way, in the same way that my veganism does. Like it just sort of, we're different, of course, but like we have that same kind of
way of thinking. I think this is related to what you're saying, but I think I would say this is something I'm saying with zero confidence. But I would posit that like racial and those kind of racial and cultural differences are less important than Britain. This might not be the case, from the Muslim perspective, but from my perspective, those differences are less big than the class difference.
Oh, definitely the class difference.
Yeah,
but the class difference is more insidious.
Yeah, yeah,
it's more difficult.
Yeah, which I think that's why. And I think probably people coming from like immigrant cultures don't probably feel the class thing so strongly. They're a little bit free from it, so they'll just interact with you. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know quite what I'm trying to describe.
There's something there. But like, it's all interesting. Anyway, I should probably start heading out now. But now that I'm fully scheduled, I mean, I could even just give you my. My schedule, and you can see when I'm about.
That would be meaningless to me. It's better to just say
I could just give you a list of the days, or whatever. Or short if you want something more short term. But yeah, and I'm walking, like it's one of these things that in the particular depot that I'm working for or working from, it's just something that everyone agrees is like quite nice that we work longer days. Sometimes we could be working 13 hours, but. To be honest, it doesn't feel like a 13-hour day. Like you're just driving around, It's
because you're active, right? That's such a huge thing. You're active but not too stressed.
Exactly.
You're doing stuff constantly, so the time passes. Yeah.
Yeah. Your mind is always engaged.
Yeah.
Even when you're doing, because like you're driving a bus, it's a big vehicle. You've got so much to look out for on the road, so much to anticipate and plan, and all this kind of stuff. It keeps your mind active in a way that's very satisfying, to be honest. It is a bit like playing a game, if I'm honest.
Are you comfortable with like the size of the bus yet?
There. Like they say, it takes a good 6 months. It's changed the way that I've driven a car. Like Rosie always says, "Oh, you drive a car like it's a big vehicle. Like you swoop in and out and." So it's definitely changed. I'm well on my way to getting used to the size of the bus, but. I'm still very new in the grand scheme of things. Although, like, you rack up a lot of miles. Like, it's very interesting. Like,
oh, I'm trying. Yeah,
I literally drive. So an average day is about between 11 and 13 hours, and all apart from a 1 or 2 hour break, is literally just driving. So I'm driving. I could be driving 10 hours a day, 4 days a week. So yeah, probably more like.
If you do the thing like the end of the day where you've just got to drive all the way back to the bus station with like an empty bus, is that a thing?
Sometimes
that always seemed like very chill.
I like a busy bus in a way.
Right.
It feels a little bit more like popping, it's all right. It's serene. I find it a little more dull than taking on passengers, but it's fine. Yeah.
It seems like a nice way to wind down. Like at the end of the day when you're kind of tired and it's just like an easing out of it is how it seemed to me.
To be honest, I feel that way.
Whenever I saw, like in an evening, whenever I saw a bus driver driving an empty bus and clearly going back to the depot, I was like, there was something like romantic about that.
A little bit, but like I kind of like it when I've got people on because we're all going home. Like it feels
right,
like
it's like all right, sharing the experience.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, come on everyone, let's all go home. I kind of like that. But it's all lovely. Like honestly, it's the best job I've ever had, and I couldn't be happier about it all. To be honest, I'm thrilled about it. Yeah.
So that's good. Like I say, as soon as you mentioned it, I was like, that's a perfect job for you, and I'm glad it's played out like that. I'm glad that it actually is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the people are absolutely lovely as well. It's all good. Some of the parking and some of the drivers on the road. But like,
Yeah,
I mean,
sure. Yeah, that's
that's
fine.
just life. That's fine, you know. But yeah, no, I'm thrilled that we're all thrilled at the depot that we actually, it's just a standard practice that everyone works 4 days a week, 3 days off.
Yeah.
So that's something we're
That's
ahead on
great.
society on, because my, you know,
Yeah.
and yeah, they're longer days, so you know, but like, yeah, driving a bus is like, it's fine. Yeah, like, it's fine, a 13-hour day, as long as you've got proper brakes, and you're fed properly, it's absolutely fine. Because what else do you do? If you're working a shorter day, you only got a couple of other extra hours either end to do anything. Well, you know, when you could have a whole
Yeah,
day.
no, yeah, no. It doesn't particularly limit your free time. And yeah, I'd much rather have an extra day off and work. Yeah, more hours per. Yeah, for
So
sure.
like, my next day off is in 3 days' time. It's just like, so
Yeah,
I only
yeah.
work for 3 days,
Oh.
yay. And then
Anyway,
that's
get
just
going before you're late.
All right. I will okay, toodaloo everyone, and we'll try and get these out a bit more often now that I'm settled in. All right. Toodaloo.